must forgive my daughter, the woman said. This is the first time in centuries I come personally to speak with one of you. And this isn't how it happens every time? Of course not. I let her hold court here. The woman brushed her fingers through the night watcher's misty hair. It helps her understand you. Dalinar frowned, trying to make sense of all this. What? Why did you choose to come out now? Because of the attention others pay you, and what did I tell you of demanding questions? Dalinar shut his mouth. Why have you come here, human? Do you not serve honor, the one you call Almighty? Look unto him for forgiveness. I ask the Ardents, Dalinar said. I didn't get what I wanted. You got what you deserved, the truth you have crafted for yourselves. I am doomed, then, Dalinar whispered, stopping in place. He could still hear those voices. I weep, mother. She looks back at him. I hear them when I close my eyes, all around me, begging me to save them. They're driving me mad. She contemplated him, the night watcher twining around her legs, then around Dalinar's, then back again. This woman, she was more than he could see. Vines from her dress curled into the earth, permeating everything. In that moment he knew that he was not seeing her, but instead a fragment with which he could interact. This woman extended into eternity. This will be your boon. I will not make of you the man you can become. I will not give you the aptitude or the strength, nor will I take from you your compulsions. But I will give you a pruning, a careful excision to let you grow. The cost will be high. Please, Dalinar said. Anything. She stepped back to him. In doing this, I provide for him a weapon. Dangerous. Very dangerous. Yet all things must be cultivated. What I take from you will grow back eventually. This is part of the cost. It will do me well to have a part of you, even if you ultimately become his. You were always bound to come to me. I control all things that can be grown, nurtured. That includes the thorns. She seized him, and the trees descended, the branches, the vines. The forest curled around him and crept into the crevices around his eyes, under his fingernails, into his mouth and ears, into his pores. A boon and a curse, the mother said. That is how it is done. I will take these things from your mind, and with them I take her. Dalinar tried to speak as plant life engulfed him. Wait! Remarkably, the vines and branches stopped. Dalinar hung there, speared by vines that had somehow pushed through his skin. There was no pain, but he felt the tendrils writhing inside his very veins.
Speak. He'll take.
He spoke with difficulty.
He'll take Evie from me.
All memories of her. This is the cost. Should I forbear? Dalinar squeezed his eyes shut. Evie. He had never deserved her.
Do it,
he whispered. The vines and branches surged forward and began to rip away pieces of him from the inside. Dalinar crawled from the forest the next morning. His men rushed to him, bringing water and bandages, though strangely he needed neither. But he was tired. Very, very tired. They propped him in the shade of his storm wagon, exhaustion spinning in the air. Molly, Felt's wife, quickly scribed a note via span reed back to the ship. Dalinar shook his head, memory fuzzy. What had happened? Had he really asked for forgiveness? He couldn't fathom why. Had he felt that bad for failing... He stretched for the word. For failing... Storms, his wife. Had he felt so bad for failing her by letting assassins claim her life? He searched his mind and found that he couldn't recall what she looked like. No image of her face, no memories of their time together. Nothing. He did remember these last few years as a drunkard. The years before, spent in conquest. In fact, everything about his past seemed clear, except her. Well, Felt said, kneeling beside him, I assume it happened?
Yes, Dalinar said.
Anything we need to know about? He asked. I once heard of a man who visited here, and from then on every person he touched fell upward instead of down.
You needn't worry. My curse is for me alone.
How strange to be able to remember scenes where she had been, but not remember... Storms take him? Her name?
What was my wife's name? Dalinar asked.
Shh, Felt said. It came out as a blur of sounds. Dalinar started.
She'd been taken completely?
Had that been the cost?
Yes.
Grief had caused him to suffer these last years. He'd suffered a breakdown at losing the woman he loved. Well, he'd assumed that he'd loved her. Curious. Nothing. It seemed that the Night Watcher had taken memories of his wife, and in so doing given him the boon of peace. However, he did still feel sorrow and guilt for failing Gavilar, so he wasn't completely healed. He still wanted a bottle to numb the grief of losing his brother. He would break that habit. When men abused drink under his command, he'd found that the solution was to work them hard and not let them taste strong wines. He could do the same to himself. It wouldn't be easy, but he could manage it. Dalinar relaxed, but felt like something else was missing inside of him. Something he couldn't identify. He listened to his men breaking camp, telling jokes now that they could leave. Beyond that, he heard rustling leaves, and beyond that, nothing. Shouldn't he have heard... He shook his head. Almighty, what a foolish quest this had been. Had he really been so weak that he needed a forest spren to relieve his grief?
I need to be in communication with the king, Dalinar said, standing. Tell our men at the docks to contact the armies. By the time I arrive, I want to have battle maps and plans for the Parshendi conquest.
He'd moped long enough. He had not always been the best of brothers or the best of light eyes. He'd failed to follow the codes, and that had cost Gavilar his life. Never again. He straightened his uniform and glanced at Molly.
Tell the sailors that, while they're in port, they're to find me an Alethi copy of the book called The Way of Kings. I'd like to hear it read to me again. Last time I wasn't in my right mind.
115. The Wrong Passion. They came from another world, using powers that we have been forbidden to touch. Dangerous powers of spren and surges. They destroyed their lands and have come to us begging. From the Aayla Steeley. A spry ocean wind blew in through the window, shaking Dalinar's hair as he stood in his villa in Thalen City. The wind was sharply chill, crisp. It didn't linger, but passed him by, turning the pages of his book with a quiet ruffling sound. It fled from the Everstorm. Crimson, furious, burning. The Everstorm's clouds flowed in from the west. Like blood billowing in water, each new thunderhead spurted from the one behind it, hemorrhaging fits of lightning.
and beneath the storm, within its shadow and upon those tempestuous seas, ships dotted the waves.
"Ships," he whispered. "They sailed during the storm?"
"He controls it," the Stormfather said, his voice diminutive, like the pattering of rain. "He uses it, as honor once used me."
So much for stopping the enemy in the ocean. Dalinar's fledgling armada had fled to take shelter from the storm, and the enemy had sailed in uncontested. The coalition had shattered anyway. They wouldn't defend this city. The storm slowed as it darkened the bay in front of Thalen City, then seemed to stop. It dominated the sky to the west, but strangely did not proceed. Enemy ships landed in its shadow, many ramming right up onto the shores. Amaram's troops flooded out of the gates to seize the ground between bay and city. There wasn't enough room for them to maneuver on top of the wall. The Alethi were field troops, and their best chance of victory would involve hitting the Parshmen while they disembarked. Behind them, Thalen troops mounted the wall, but they were not veterans. Their navy had always been their strength. Dalinar could faintly hear General Kahl on the street below, shouting for runners and scribes to send word to Yuathiru, calling up the Alethi reinforcements.
"Too slow," Dalinar thought.
Suitably deploying troops could take hours, and though Amaram was hustling his men, they weren't going to get together in time for a proper assault on the ships. And then there were the fused, dozens of which launched into the skies from the ships. He imagined his armies bottlenecked as they left the Oath Gate, assaulted from the air as they tried to fight through the streets to reach the lower portion of the city. It came together with a frightening beauty. Their armada fleeing the storm, their armies unprepared, the sudden evaporation of support.
"He's planned for everything."
"It's what he does."
"You know, cultivation warned me that my memories would return. She said she was pruning me. Do you know why she did that? Did I have to remember?"
"I do not know. Is it relevant?"
"That depends upon the answer to a question," Dalinar said. He carefully closed the book atop the dresser before the window, then felt the symbols on its cover.
"What is the most important step that a man can take?"
He straightened his blue uniform, then slipped the tome off the table. With the Way of Kings a comfortable weight in his hand, he stepped out the door and into the city.
"All this way?" Shallan whispered. "And they're already here?" Kaladin and Adolin stood like two statues to either side of her, their faces twin stoic masks. She could see the Oath Gate distinctly. That round platform at the edge of the bridge was the exact size of the control buildings. Hundreds upon hundreds of strange spren stood in the lake of beads that marked the shore of Thalen City. They looked vaguely humanoid, though they were twisted and odd, like shimmering dark light. More the scribbled outlines of people, like drawings she'd done in a maddened state. On the shore, a large dark mass of living red light surged across the obsidian ground. It was something more terrible than all of these, something that made her eyes hurt to look upon. And as if that weren't enough, a half-dozen fused passed overhead, then landed on the bridge that led to the Oathgate platform. "They knew," Adolin said. "They led us here with that cursed vision."
"Be wary," Shallan whispered, "of anyone who claims to be able to see the future."
"No! No, that wasn't from him!"
Kaladin looked between them, frantic, and finally turned to Syl for support.
"It was like when the Stormfather, Azure warned us from this path," Adolin said.
"And what else could we have done?" Kaladin said, then hushed his voice, pulling back with the rest of them into the shadowed concealment of the trees.
"We couldn't go to the Horneater Peaks like Azure wanted. The enemy waits there, too. Everyone says their ships patrol there."
Kaladin shook his head.
"This was our only option."
"We don't have enough food to return," Adolin said.
"Even if we did," Syl whispered, "where would we go? They hold Celebrant.
They're watching this oath gate, so they're probably watching the others.
Shallan sank down on the obsidian ground. Pattern put his hand on her shoulder, humming softly with concern. Her body yearned for stormlight to wash away her fatigue. Light could make an illusion, change this world into something else, at least for a few moments, so she could pretend.
"Kaladin is right," Syl said. "We can't back down now. Our remaining gemstones won't last much longer."
"We have to try," Kaladin said with a nod.
"Try what, Cal?" Adolin said. "Take on an army of Voidbringers by ourselves?"
"I don't know how the portal works," Shallan added. "I don't even know how much stormlight it might require."
We'll try something," Kaladin said. "We have stormlight still. An illusion? A distraction? We could get you to the Oath Gate and you could find out how to free us."
He shook his head.
"We can make it work. We have to."
Shallan bowed her head, listening to Pattern hum. Some problems could not be fixed with a lie. Yasna carefully stepped out of the way of a troop of soldiers running for the Oath Gate. She had been informed via Spanreed that troops were gathering in Urethiru to come help. Unfortunately, they would soon have to acknowledge what she already knew. Thalen City was lost. Their adversary had played this hand too well. That angered her, but she kept that emotion in check. At the very least, she hoped that Amaram's band of malcontents would soak up arrows and spears long enough to let the Thalen civilians evacuate. Lightning from the storm lit the city red. Focus. She had to focus on what she could do, not what she had failed to do. First, she had to see that her uncle didn't get himself killed fighting a useless battle. Second, she needed to help evacuate Thalen City. She had already warned Urethiru to prepare for refugees. Both these goals would wait a short time as she dealt with a matter even more pressing.
"The facts align," Ivory said. "The truth, that has always been, will now soon manifest to all."
He rode upon the high collar of her dress, tiny, holding on with one hand.
"You are correct. A traitor is."
Yasna undid the buttons on her safe hand sleeve and pinned it back, exposing the gloved hand underneath. In preparation, she'd also worn a scout's yellow and gold hava, with shorter skirts slit at the sides and front, trousers underneath, sturdy boots. She turned out of the path of another group of cursing soldiers and strode up the steps to the doorway of the temple of Pelaya Elin. True to the information she'd been given, she found Renarin Kolin kneeling on the floor inside, head bowed, alone. A spren rose from his back, bright red, shimmering like the heat of a mirage. A crystalline structure like a snowflake, though it dripped light upward toward the ceiling. In her pouch, she carried a sketch of the proper spren of the Truth Watchers. And this was something different. Yasna put her hand to the side. Then, taking a deep breath, summoned Ivory as a shard blade. Venli hopped down from the ship's improvised gangway. The city before her was yet another marvel. Built up the side of a mountain, it looked almost like it had been cut from the stone, sculpted like the winds and rain had shaped the shattered plains. Hundreds of singers streamed around her. Hulking Fused walked among them, bearing carapace armor as impressive as any shard plate. Some of the ordinary singers wore war form, but unlike their Alethi counterparts, they had not been through combat training. Azish, Thalen, Marathi, a host of nationalities, these newly awakened singers were frightened, uncertain. Venli attuned agony. Would they force her to march to the front line? She didn't have much battle training either. Even with a form of power, she'd be cut to ribbons.
"Like my people on the field of Narak, who were sacrificed to birth the Everstorm."
Odium seemed very quick to expend the lives of both listener and singer. Timber pulsed a piece in her pouch, and Venli rested her hand on it. "Hush," she whispered to Agony. "Hush! Do you want one of them to hear you?" Timber reluctantly softened her pulsings, though Venli could still feel a faint vibration from her pouch, and that relaxed her. She almost thought that she could hear the rhythm of peace herself. One of the hulking fused called for her.
"You, listener woman, come."
Venli attuned the rhythm of destruction. She would not be intimidated by these, gods though they be. She stepped up to this one and kept her head high. The fused handed her a sword in a sheath. She took it, then attuned subservience.
"I've used an axe before, but not..."
"Carry it,"
he said, eyes glowing softly red.
"You may need to defend yourself."
She did not object further. There was a fine line between respectful confidence and defiance. She belted the sword on her slender body, wishing she had some carapace.
"Now,"
the fused said to Conceit, striding forward and expecting her to keep up.
"Tell me what this little one is saying."
Venli followed him to a gathering of singers in work form, holding spears. She had been speaking to the fused in the ancient language, but these were speaking in Thalen.
"I'm an interpreter," she thought, relaxing. "That's why they wanted me on the battlefield."
"What was it?" Venli said to derision, addressing the one the fused had indicated. "You wished to say to the Holy One?"
"We..."
The singer licked his lips.
"We aren't soldiers, ma'am. We're fishers. What are we doing here?"
Though a shade of the rhythm of anxiety laced his words, his cringing form and face were the stronger indication. He spoke and acted like a human. She interpreted.
"You are here to do as you are told,"
the fused told them through Venli.
"In return, you are rewarded with further opportunities to serve."
Though his rhythm was derision, he didn't seem angry. More as if he were lecturing a child. She passed that along, and the sailors looked to each other, shuffling uncomfortably.
"They wish to object," she told the fused. "I can read it in them."
"They may speak," he said.
She prompted them, and their leader looked down, then spoke to Anxiety.
"It's just that Thalen City... this is our home. We're expected to attack it?"
"Yes,"
the fused said after Venli interpreted.
"They enslaved you. They tore your families apart, treated you like dumb animals. Do you not thirst for vengeance?"
"Vengeance?"
the sailor said, looking to his fellows for support.
"We're glad to be free. But, I mean... some of them treated us pretty nice. Can't we just go settle somewhere and leave the Thalens alone?"
"No,"
the fused said. Venli interpreted, then jumped to follow him as he stalked off.
"Great one?" she asked to subservience.
"These have the wrong passion," he said. "The ones who attacked Kolinar did so gladly."
"The Alethi are a warlike people, Great One. It's not surprising they passed this on to their slaves. And perhaps these were better treated?"
"They were slaves for far too long. We need to show them a better way."
Venli stuck close to the fused, happy to have found one that was both sane and reasonable. He didn't shout at the groups they visited, many of whom shared similar complaints. He merely had to repeat the same sorts of phrases.
"You must seize vengeance, little ones. You must earn your passion. Qualify yourselves for greater service, and you will be elevated to the place of a regal, given a form of power. This land was yours long ago before they stole it. You have been trained to be docile,
we will teach you to be strong again. The fused remained calm, but fierce, like a smoldering fire, controlled, but ready to burst alight. He eventually walked to join some of his fellows. Around them, the Singer army formed up awkwardly, coating the land just east of the bay. Alethi troops mustered across a short battlefield, banners flapping. They had archers, heavy infantry, light infantry, even some outriders on horses. Venli hummed to agony. This was going to be a slaughter. She suddenly felt something odd, like a rhythm, but oppressive, demanding. It shook the very air, and the ground beneath her feet trembled. Lightning in the clouds behind seemed to flash to this rhythm, and in a moment she saw that the area around her was filled with ghostly spren. "Those are the spirits of the dead," she realized. "Fused who haven't yet chosen a body." Most were twisted to the point that she barely recognized them as singers. Two were roughly the size of buildings. One dominated even these, a creature of swirling violence, tall as a small hill, seemingly made up entirely of red smoke. She could see these overlaid on the real world, but somehow knew they would be invisible to most. She could see into the other world. That happened sometimes right before. A blistering heat shone behind her. Venli braced herself. She usually only saw him during the storms, but this was a storm. It hovered behind, immobile, churning the seas. Light crystallized beside her, forming an ancient parchment with a face marbled gold and white, and a regal scepter he carried like a cane. For once, his presence didn't vaporize her immediately. Venli released a relieved breath. This was more an impression than his true being. Still, power streamed from him like the tendrils of a vine bud waving in the wind, vanishing into infinity. Odium had come to personally supervise this battle.
Teft hid. He couldn't face the others. Not after what he'd done. Rock and Bissig bleeding, Eth dead. The room destroyed, the honor blade stolen. He had Honor Bridge 4. Uniform. Teft scrambled through the rock hallways, passing shame spren in bursts, looking for a place where nobody could see him. He'd done it again, to yet another group that trusted him. Just like with his family, whom he'd sold out in a misguided attempt at righteousness. Just like with his squad in Sadius's army, whom he'd abandoned for his addiction. And now, Bridge 4? He tripped on an uneven bit of stone in the dark hallway and fell, grunting, scraping his hand against the floor. He groaned, then lay there, knocking his head against the stone. Would that he could find some place hidden and squeeze inside, never, ever to be found again. When he looked up, she was standing there, the woman made of light and air with curls of hair that vanished into mist.
"Why are you following me?" Teft growled. "Go pick one of the others. Collect, pick anyone but me."
He rose and pushed past her. She had barely any substance, and continued down the hallway. Light from ahead showed that he'd accidentally made his way to the outer ring of the tower, where windows and balconies overlooked the Oathgate platforms. He stopped by a stone doorway, puffing, holding on with a hand that bled from the knuckles.
"Teft, you don't want me. I'm broken. Picklopen, Rock, Sigzel, damnation woman, I..."
What was that? Drawn by faint sounds, Teft walked into the empty room. Those sounds. Shouts? He walked out onto the balcony. Below, figures with marbled skin fluttered across one of the Oathgate platforms, the one that led to Kolinar. They were supposed to be locked, unusable. Scouts and soldiers began to shout in panic down below. Eurythiru was under attack.
Puffing from her run, Navani scrambled up the last few steps onto the wall of Thalen City. Here she found Queen Fen's retinue.
Finally!
She checked her arm clock. If only she could find a fabrial that would manipulate exhaustion, not just pain. Wouldn't that be something? There were exhaustion spren, after all. Navani strode along the wall walk toward Fen. Below, Amaram's troops flew the new Sadius banner, the axe and the tower, white on forest green. Anticipation spren and fear spren, the eternal attendants of the battlefield, grew up around them. Sadius's men were still streaming through the gates, but already blocks of archers moved forward. They'd soon start pelting the disorganized Parshman army.
That storm, though. The enemy only keeps coming, Fen said as Navani approached, her admirals making room. I'll soon get to judge your famed Alethi troops firsthand, as they fight an impossible battle. Actually, Navani said, we're better off than it looks. The new Sadius is a renowned tactician. His soldiers are well rested, and if lacking in discipline, known for their tenacity. We can attack the enemy before it finishes deploying. Then if they rebound and overwhelm us with numbers, we can pull back into the city until we get reinforcements. Kamakal, Fen's consort, nodded.
This is winnable, Fen. We might even be able to capture some of our ships back.
The ground shook. For a moment, Navani felt that she was on a swaying ship. She cried out, grabbing the battlement to keep from falling. Out in the field, between the enemy troops and the Alethi ones, the ground shattered. Lines and cracks split the stone, and then an enormous stone arm pulled itself from the ground, the fractures having outlined its hand, forearm, elbow, and upper arm. A monster easily 30 feet tall pulled itself from the stone, dropping chips and dust on the army below. Like a skeleton made of rock, it had a wedge-shaped head with deep, molten red eyes. Venli got to watch the thunderclasts awaken. Among the waiting spirits were two larger masses of energy, souls so warped, so mangled, they didn't seem singer at all. One crawled into the stone ground, somehow inhabiting it like a spren taking residence in a gem heart. The stone became its form. Then it ripped itself free of the rock. Around her, the Parshmen stumbled back in awe, so surprised that they actually drew spren. The thing loomed over the human forces, while its companion climbed into the stone ground, but didn't rip out immediately. There was one other, mightier than even these. It was out in the water of the bay, but when she looked into the other world, she couldn't help but glance toward it. If those two lesser souls had created such daunting stone monsters, then what was that mountain of power? In the physical realm, the fused knelt and bowed their heads toward Odium, so they could see him too. Venli knelt quickly, knocking her knees against the stone. Timber pulsed to anxiety, and Venli put her hand on the pouch, squeezing it. Quiet. We can't fight him.
Tarash, Odium said, resting fingers upon the shoulder of the fused she had been following. Old friend. You look well in this new body. Thank you, Master, Tarash said. Your mind holds firm, Tarash. I am proud of you.
Odium waved towards Thalen City.
I have prepared a grand army for our victory today. What do you think of our prize? An excellent position of great import, even without the Oathgate, Tarash said. But I fear for our armies, Master.
Oh? Odium asked.
They are weak, untrained, and frightened. Many may refuse to fight. They don't crave vengeance, Master. Even with the Thunderclast, we may be outmatched.
"These?" Odium asked, looking over his shoulder at the gathered singers.
"Oh, Tarash, you think too small, my friend. These are not my army. I brought them here to watch."
"Watch what?" Venli asked, looking up. She cringed, but Odium paid her no mind. Odium held his hands to the sides, yellow-gold power streaming behind his figure like a wind made visible. Beyond him in the other place, that red-churning power became more real. It was pulled into this realm completely, and the ocean boiled. Something came surging out. Something primeval, something Venli had felt but never truly known. Red mist. Ephemeral. Like a shadow you see on a dark day and mistake for something real. Charging red horses, angry and galloping. The forms of men killing and dying, shedding blood and reveling in it. Bones piled atop one another, making a hill upon which men struggled. The red mist climbed up from the surging waves, rolling out onto an empty section of rock, northward along the rim of the water. It brought to her a lust for the battlefield, a beautiful focus, a thrill for the fight.
The largest of the Spren, the roiling mass of red light, vanished from Shadesmar. Kaladin gasped and walked closer to the outer edge of the trees, feeling that power vacate this place and go to the other? "Something's happening," he said to Adolin and Shallan, who were still discussing what to do. "We might have an opening." They joined him and watched as the strange army of Spren began to vanish too, winking out in waves.
"The Oathgate?" Shallan asked. "Maybe they're using it?"
In moments, only the six fused remained, guarding the bridge.
"Six," Kaladin thought. "Can I defeat six?"
Did he need to?
"I can challenge them as a distraction," he said to the others. "Maybe we can use some illusions as well? We can draw them off while Shallan sneaks over and figures out how to work the Oathgate."
"I suppose we don't have any other choice," Adolin said. "But..."
"What?" Kaladin said, urgent.
"Aren't you worried about where that army went?"
"Passion," Odium said.
"There is great passion here."
Venli felt cold.
"I have prepared these men for decades," Odium said. "Men who want nothing so much as something to break. To gain vengeance against the one who killed their High Prince. Let the singers watch and learn. I've prepared a different army to fight for us today."
Ahead of them, on the battlefield, the human ranks slumped, their banner wavering. A man in glittering shard plate, sitting upon a white horse, led them. Deep within his helm, something started glowing red. The dark Spren flew toward the men, finding welcoming bodies and willing flesh. The red mist made them lust, made their minds open, and the Spren then bonded to the men, slipping into those open souls.
"Master, you have learned to inhabit humans," Tuarash said to subservience. "Spren have always been able to bond with them, Tuarash," Odium said. "It merely requires the right mindset and the right environment."
10,000 Alethi in green uniforms gripped their weapons, their eyes glowing a deep, dangerous red.
"Go," Odium whispered. "Kolin would have sacrificed you. Manifest your anger. Kill the Blackthorn who murdered your High Prince. Set your passion free. Give me your pain and seize this city in my name."
The army turned and, led by a shard-bearer in gleaming plate, attacked Thalen City. 116. Alone. "We took them in, as commanded by the gods," What else could we do? They were a people forlorn, without a home. Our pity destroyed us, for their betrayal extended even to our gods, to Spren, Stone, and Wind. From the Aela Steely. Kaladin thought he could hear the wind as he stepped from beneath the obsidian trees. Syl said this place had no wind. Yet was that the tinkling of glass leaves as they quivered? Was that the sigh of cool, fresh air coursing around him? He'd come far in the last half year. He seemed a man distant from the one who carried bridges against Parshendi arrows. That man had welcomed death. But now, even on the bad days when everything was cast in grays, he defied death. It could not have him. For while life was painful, life was also sweet. He had Syl, he had the men of Bridge Four, and most importantly, he had purpose. Today Kaladin would protect Dalinar Kholin. He strode toward the Sea of Souls that marked the existence of Thalen City on the other side. Many of those souls' flames, in ranks, had turned sharply red. He shivered to think what that meant. He stepped up onto the bridge, beads churning below, and reached the highest point in its arc before the enemy noticed him. Six fused, turned, and rose into the air, arraying to regard him. They raised long spears, then looked to the sides, seeming shocked. One man? Alone? Kaladin set one foot back, gently scraping the tip of his boot against the white marble bridge, and fell into a combat posture. He hooked the harpoon in a one-handed underarm grip, letting out a long breath. Then he drew in all of his stormlight and burst alight. Within the power's embrace, a lifetime's worth of moments seemed to snap into place. Throwing gas to the ground in the rain, screaming in defiance while charging at the front of a bridge, coming awake in the practice grounds during the weeping, fighting the assassin on the storm wall. The fused leaped for him, trailing long cloaks and robes. Kaladin lashed himself straight upward and took to the sky for the first time in what had been far, far too long. Dalinar stumbled as the ground shook again. A second sequence of cracks sounded outside. He was too low down in the city now to see past the city wall, but he feared he knew what that breaking stone must signify. A second thunderclast. Violet fear-spren sprouted from the streets all around, as civilians shouted and screamed. Dalinar had made his way down through the central section of the city, the part called the Ancient Ward, and had just entered the Low Ward, the bottom portion nearest the city wall. The steps behind him were filling with people who fled upward, toward the Oath Gate. As the trembling subsided, Dalinar grabbed the arm of a young mother who was pounding frantically on the door of a building. He sent her running up the steps with her child in her arms. He needed these people off the streets, preferably taking shelter at Yirithiru, so they wouldn't get caught between clashing armies. Dalinar felt his age as he jogged past the next row of buildings, still clutching the Way of Kings under his arm. He had barely any spears on him, an oversight, but neither did he have plate or blade. This would be his first battle in many, many years without shards. He'd insisted on stepping out of those boots, and would have to let Amaram and other shard-bearers command the field. How was Amaram faring? Last Dalinar had seen, the High Prince had been arranging his archers, but from this low in the city Dalinar couldn't see the troops outside. A sudden feeling slammed into him. It was focus and passion, an eager energy, a warmth, a promise of strength, glory, life. To Dalinar, this thirst for the battle felt like the attentions of a lover you'd turned away long ago. The thrill was here. His old, dear friend. No, he whispered, sagging against a wall. The emotion struck him harder than the earthquake had. No. The taste was so, so appealing. It whispered that he could save this city all on his own. Let the thrill in and the Blackthorn could return. He didn't need shards. He only needed this passion. Sweeter than any wine. No.
He shoved the thrill aside, scrambling to his feet. As he did, however, a shadow moved beyond the wall. A monster of stone, one of the beasts from his visions, standing some 30 feet tall, looming over the 20-foot city wall. The thunderclast clasped its hands together, then swung them low, crashing them through the city wall, flinging out chunks of stone. Dalinar leaped toward cover, but a falling boulder pounded into him, crushing him into a wall. Blackness. Falling. Power. He gasped, and stormlight flooded into him. He shook awake to find his arm pinned by the boulder, rocks and dust falling on a rubble-strewn street before him. And not just rubble. He coughed, realizing some of those lumps were bodies coated in dust lying motionless. He struggled to pull his arm from under the boulder. Nearby, the thunderclast kicked at the broken wall, opening a hole. Then it stepped through, footfalls shaking the ground, approaching the shelf that made up the front of the ancient ward. A massive stone foot thumped to the ground by Dalinar. Storms! Dalinar hauled on his arm, heedless of the pain or the damage to his body, and finally got it free. The stormlight healed him as he crawled away, ducking as the monster ripped the roof off a building at the front of the ancient ward and sent debris raining down. The gemstone reserve? The monster cast the roof aside and several fused that he'd missed before, they were riding on its shoulders, slipped down into the building. Dalinar was torn between heading for the battlefield outside and investigating whatever was going on here.
"Any idea what they're after?" he asked the Stormfather. "No, this is odd behavior."
In a flash decision, Dalinar yanked his book out from under some rubble nearby, then went running back up the now empty steps to the ancient ward, dangerously close to the thunderclast. The monster released a sudden piercing roar like a thunderclap. The shockwave almost knocked Dalinar off his feet again. In a fit of rage, the titanic creature attacked the gemstone reserve, ripping apart its walls and innards, tossing chunks backward. A million sparkling bits of glass caught the sunlight as they fell over the city, the wall, and beyond.
"Spheres and gemstones," Dalinar realized. "All the wealth of Thelena, scattered like leaves."
The thing seemed increasingly angry as it pounded the area around the reserve. Dalinar put his back to a wall as two fused darted past, led by what appeared to be a glowing yellow spren. These two fused didn't seem to be able to fly, but there was a startling grace to their motion. They slid along the stone street with no apparent effort, as if the ground were greased. Dalinar gave chase, squeezing past a group of scribes huddled in the street, but before he could catch up, the fused attacked one palanquin among the many trying to move through the crowds. They knocked it over, shoving aside the porters, and dug inside. The fused ignored Dalinar's shouts. They soon streaked away, one tucking a large object under its arm. Dalinar drew in stormlight from some fleeing merchants, then ran the rest of the distance to the palanquin. Amid the wreckage, he found a young Thalen woman alongside an elderly man who appeared to have been previously wounded, judging by the bandages. Dalinar helped the dazed woman to a sitting position.
"What did they want?"
"Right, Lord,"
she said in Thalen. She blinked, then seized his arm.
"The king's drop. A ruby. They tried to steal it before, and now they've taken it."
"A ruby? A simple gemstone?" The porters attended to the old man, who was barely conscious. Dalinar looked over his shoulder at the retreating thunderclast. The enemy had ignored the wealth of the gemstone reserve. Why would they want a specific ruby? He was about to press for more details when something else drew his attention. From this higher vantage, he could see through the hole the thunderclast had broken in the wall. Figures outside with glowing red eyes arrayed themselves on the battlefield, but they weren't parshmen. Those were Satius uniforms.
Yasna moved into the temple, gripping her shard blade, stepping on slippered feet. The red spren rising from Renarin, like a snowflake made of crystal and light, seemed to sense her and panicked, disappearing into Renarin with a puff.
"A spren is," Ivory said. "The wrong spren is."
Renarin Kolin was a liar. He was no truth watcher.
"That is a spren of odium,"
Ivory said.
Corrupted, Spren. But a human? Bonded to one? This thing is not.
It is, Jasnah whispered. Somehow. She was now close enough to hear Renarin whispering,
No. Not. Father. No. Please.
Shallan wove light. A simple illusion recalled from the pages of her sketchpad. Some soldiers from the army, people from Yurithiru, and some of the Spren she'd sketched on her trip. Around 20 individuals in total.
Tarn's nails, Adolin said as Kaladin shot upward through the sky. The bridge boy's really into it.
Kaladin drew away four of the fused, but two remained behind. Shallan added an illusion of azure to her group, then some of the reachers she'd drawn. She hated using up so much stormlight. What if she didn't have enough left to get through the Oath Gate?
Good luck, she whispered to Adolin. Remember, I won't be controlling these directly. They will make only rudimentary motions.
We'll be fine.
Adolin glanced at Pattern, Syl, and the Spren of his sword.
Right, guys?
Pattern said. I do not like being stabbed.
Wise words, friend. Wise words.
Adolin gave Shallan a kiss. Then they took off running toward the bridge. Syl, Pattern, and the Deadeye followed, as did the illusions, which were bound to Adolin. This force drew the attention of the last two fused. As those were distracted, Shallan slipped over to the base of the bridge, then eased herself down into the beads. She crossed silently beneath the bridge, using precious stormlight to make herself a safe walking platform with one of the beads she'd found while on Honor's Path. She made her way across to the small island platform that represented the Oath Gate on this side. Two enormous Spren stood above it. Judging by the shouting on the bridge, Adolin and the others were doing their job. But could Shallan do hers? She stepped up beneath the two sentinels, which stood tall as buildings, reminiscent of statues in armor. One mother of pearl, the other black, with a variegated oily shimmer. Did they guard the Oath Gate? Or did they, somehow, facilitate its workings? At a loss for what else to do, Shallan simply waved her hand. Hello? Steadily, two heads turned down toward her. The air around Venli, once crowded by the spirits of the dead, was now empty save for the single black figure of swirling smoke. She'd missed that one at first, as it was the size of a normal person. It stood near Odium, and she did not know what it represented. The second thunderclast dragged arms as long as its body, with hands like hooks. It crossed the field eastward toward the city walls and the human army of turncoats. Just behind Venli to the west, the common singers stood arrayed before their ships. They stayed far from the red mist of the unmade coating the north side of the battlefield. Odium stood beside Venli, a glowing force of burning gold. The first thunderclast left the city and placed something down on the ground. Two of the fused, gods with lithe bodies and little armor. They skirted the turncoat army, sliding along the rock with an uncanny grace.
"What is that they carry?" Venli asked. "A gemstone? Is that why we came here? A rock?"
"No," Odium said. "That is merely a precaution. A last-minute addition I made to prevent a potential disaster. The prize I claim today is far greater. Even more grand than the city itself. The conduit of my freedom. The Bane of Roshar." Forward, child, to the gap in the wall. I may need you to speak for me.
She swallowed, then started hiking toward the city. The dark spirit followed, the one of swirling mists, the last who had yet to inhabit a body.
Kaladin soared through this place of black heavens, haunted clouds, and a distant sun. Only four of the fused had chosen to take off after him. Adolin would have to deal with the other two. The four flew with precision. They used lashings like Kaladin did, though they didn't seem to be able to vary their speed as much as he could. It took them longer to build up to greater lashings, which should have made it easy to stay ahead of them. But storms, the way they flew. So graceful. They didn't jerk this way or that, but flowed lithely from one motion to the next. They used their entire bodies to sculpt the wind of their passing and control their flight. Even the assassin in white hadn't been so fluid as these, so like the winds themselves. Kaladin had claimed the skies, but storms had looked like he'd moved into territory where someone had a prior entitlement. "I don't have to fight them," he thought. "I only have to keep them busy long enough for Shallan to figure out how to activate the portal." Kaladin lashed himself upward toward those strange two-flat clouds. He twisted in the air and found one of the fused almost upon him. A male with pale white skin swirled through with a single marbling of red like smoke blown across the cheeks. The creature stabbed its long spear at him, but Kaladin lashed himself to the side just in time. Lashing wasn't flying, and that was part of its strength. Kaladin didn't have to be facing any specific direction to move in the air. He fell up and slightly to the north, but fought while facing downward, battering away the enemy lance with his harpoon. The fused's weapon was far longer, with sharpened sides rather than a single fine point. Kaladin's harpoon was at a severe disadvantage. Right. Time to change that. As the fused rammed the lance upward again, Kaladin reached out with both hands on his harpoon's haft, holding it sideways. He let the enemy spear pass into the opening between his arms, chest, and harpoon. He lashed his own weapon downward with multiple lashings. Then he dropped it. It slid along the length of the lance and smacked into the fused's arms. The creature shouted in pain, letting go of his weapon. At the same moment, Kaladin dove, canceling all upward lashings, and bunding himself downward instead. The sudden jarring change made his stomach lurch and his vision go black. Even with stormlight, this was almost too much. His ears ringing, he gritted his teeth, riding the momentary loss of sight until, blessedly, his vision returned. He spun in the air, then pulled up and snatched the falling lance as it dropped past him. The four fused swooped after him, more cautious. The wind of his passing chilled the sweat on his face from his near blackout. "Let's not try that again," Kaladin thought, hefting his new weapon. He'd practiced with things like this in pike walls, but they were normally too long to maneuver in one-on-one combat. Flying would negate that. The fused he'd disarmed swooped down to fetch the harpoon. Kaladin waved his hand toward the other's palm upward, then took off toward some nearby dark obsidian mountains, forested on the sides, the direction he and the others had come. Down below, he could see Shallan's illusions engaging the two fused on the bridge. Eyes forward, Kaladin thought as the four others chased after him. He belonged in the skies with these creatures. Time to prove it. Prime Akasix Yanagon the First, Emperor of Al-Makabak, paced in the cabin of his ship. He was actually starting to feel like an emperor. He wasn't embarrassed talking to the viziers and scions any longer. He understood much of what they discussed now and didn't jump when someone called him Your Majesty. Remarkably, he was starting to forget that he'd ever been a frightened thief sneaking through the palace. But then, even an emperor had limits to his rule. He paced back the other way. Regal robes of Azish patterns weighed him down, along with the imperial Yuana Zixen, a fancy hat with sweeping sides. He'd have taken the thing off, but he felt he needed its authority when talking to his three most important advisors. "Lif thinks we should have stayed," he said. "War is coming to Thalen City." "We're merely protecting our fleet from the storm," Nora said. "Pardon, Vizier, but that's a load of chul dung, and you know it. We left because you're worried that Kolin is being manipulated by the enemy." "That is not the only reason," Sion Unokwa said. He was an old man with a full paunch. "We have always been skeptical of the Lost Radiance. The powers that Dalinar Kolin wishes to harness are extremely dangerous, as now proven by the translations of an ancient record." Lift says, Yonagon said.
Lift,
Nora said. You listen to her far too much, your Imperial Majesty. She's smart. She once tried to eat your cummerbund. She thought it sounded like a type of dessert.
Yonagon took a deep breath.
Besides, she's not that kind of smart. She's the other kind.
What other kind, your Imperial Majesty?
Vizier Dalxi asked. Her hair was powder white, peeking out beneath her formal headdress.
The kind that knows when it's wrong to betray a friend. I think we should go back. Am I Emperor or not?
You are Emperor,
Nora said.
But, Your Majesty, remember your lessons. The thing that separates us from the monarchies of the East and the chaos they suffer is that our Emperor is held in check. Aesir can and will withstand a change in dynasty. Your power is absolute, but you do not exercise it all. You must not.
You were chosen,
Unokwa said,
by Aesir himself to lead.
I was chosen, Yonagon cut in, because nobody would shed a tear if the assassin in white came for me. Let's not play games, all right?
You performed a miracle,
Unokwa said.
Lift performed a miracle, using powers you now say are too dangerous to trust.
The three, two viziers, one scion, looked to each other. Unokwa was their religious leader, but Nora had most seniority by year of passing the tests for Master Office, which she'd done, remarkably, at age 12. Yonagon stopped by the cabin window. Outside, waves chopped, churning, rocking their ship. His smaller ship had met up with the main fleet, then joined them in taking shelter in the Vitlar Cove along the Thalen coast. But reports via Spanreed said that the Everstorm had stopped near Thalen City. A knock came at the door. Yonagon let Dalxi, least senior despite her age, call admittance. Yonagon settled in his regal chair as a guardsman with light brown skin entered. Yonagon thought he recognized the man, who held a cloth to the side of his face and winced as he gave the formal bow of admittance to the Emperor.
Bono? Nora asked. What happened to your charge? You were to keep her busy and distracted, yes?
I was, Your Grace,
Bono said.
Until she kicked me in my spears and stuffed me under the bed, Your Grace. Don't right know how she moved me. She's not real big, that one.
Lift? Yonagon thought. He almost cried out, demanding answers, but that would have shamed this man. Yonagon held himself back with difficulty, and Nora nodded to him in appreciation of a lesson learned.
When was this? Nora asked.
Right before we left, the guard said. Sorry, Your Grace. I've been down since then. Only now recovered.
Yonagon turned toward Nora. Surely now she would see the importance of returning. The storm had yet to advance. They could go back if... Another figure approached the door, a woman in the robes and pattern of a second-level scribe, Seventh Circle. She entered and quickly gave the formal bows to Yonagon, so hasty she forgot the third gesture of subservient obedience.
Viziers, she said,
bowing in turn to them, then to Unokwa.
News from the city.
Good news?
Nora asked hopefully.
The Alethi have turned against the Thalens, and now seek to conquer them. They've been allied with the Parshmen all along. Your Grace, by fleeing, we have narrowly avoided a trap.
Quickly,
Nora said.
Separate our ships from any that bear Alethi troops. We must not be caught unaware.
They left, abandoning Yonagon to the care of a dozen young scribes, who were next in line for basking in his presence. He settled into his seat, worried and afraid, feeling a sickness in his gut. The Alethi, traitors? Lift had been wrong. He had been wrong. Aesir bless them. This really was the end of days.
We are the gatekeepers,
the two enormous Spren said to Shallan, speaking with voices that overlapped, as if one. Though their mouths did not move, the voices reverberated through Shallan.
Lightweaver, you have no permission to use this portal.
But I need to get through, Shallan cried up to them. I have Stormlight to pay.
Your payment will be refused. We are locked by the word of the parent.
Your parent? Who?
The parent is dead now.
So?
We are locked. Travel to and from Shadesmar was prohibited during the parent's last days. We are bound to obey.
Behind Shallan, on the bridge, Adolin had devised a clever tactic. He acted like an illusion. Her false people had instructions to act like they were fighting, though without her direct attention, that meant they just stood around and slashed at the air. To avoid revealing himself, Adolin had chosen to do the same, slashing about with his harpoon randomly. Pattern and Syl did likewise, while the two fused hovered overhead. One held her arm, which had been hit, but now seemed to be healing. They knew someone in that mass was real, but they couldn't ascertain who. Shallan's time was short. She looked back up at the gatekeepers.
Please, the other oath gate, the one at Kolinar, let me through.
Impossible, they said. We are bound by honor, by rules Spren cannot break. This portal is closed.
Then why did you let those others through? The army that stood around here earlier.
The souls of the dead? They did not need our portal. They were called by the enemy, pulled along ancient paths to waiting hosts. You living cannot do the same. You must seek the perpendicularity to transfer.
The enormous Spren cocked their heads in concert.
We are apologetic. We have been alone very long. We would enjoy granting passage to men again, but we cannot do that which was forbidden.
Zeth of the Skybreakers hovered far above the battlefield.
The Alethi have changed sides, Aboshi?
Zeth asked.
They have seen the truth,
Nin said, hovering beside him. Only the two of them watched. Zeth did not know where the rest of the Skybreakers had gone. Nearby, the Everstorm rumbled its discontent. Red lightning rippled across the surface, passing from one cloud to the next.
All along, Zeth said, this world belonged to the Parshmen. My people watched not for the return of an invading enemy, but for the masters of the house.
Yes,
Nin said.
And you sought to stop them.
I knew what must happen if they returned.
Nin turned toward him.
Who has jurisdiction over this land, Zeth, son Naturo? A man can rule his home until the city lord demands his taxes. The city lord controls his lands until the high lord in turn comes to him for payment. But the high lord must answer to the high prince when war is called in his lands. And the king, he must answer to God. You said God was dead. Our God is dead. Another won the war by right of conquest. The original masters of this land have returned, as you so aptly made metaphor, with the keys to the house. So tell me, Zeth son Naturo, he who is about to swear the third ideal, whose law should the Skybreakers follow? That of humans, or that of the real owners of this land?
There seemed to be no choice. Nin's logic was sound. No choice at all.
Don't be stupid, the sword said. Let's go fight those guys.
The Parshmen. They are the rightful rulers of the land, Zeth said.
Rightful? Who has a right to land? Humans are always claiming things, but nobody asks the things, now do they? Well, nobody owns me. Vivenna told me. I'm my own sword.
I have no choice.
Really? Didn't you tell me you spent 1,000 years following the instructions of a rock?
More than 7 years, Sword Nimi. And I didn't follow the rock, but the words of the one who held it. I...
had no choice. But it had always been nothing more than a rock. Kaladin swooped downward and passed above the treetops, rattling the glass leaves, sending a spray of broken shards behind himself. He turned upward with the slope of the mountain, adding another lashing to his speed, then another. When he passed the tree line, he lashed himself closer to the rock, skimming with obsidian only inches from his face. He used his arms to sculpt the wind around himself, angling toward a crack through the glossy black rock where two mountains met. Alive with light and wind, he didn't care if the fused were gaining on him or not. Let them watch. His angle was wrong to get through the crack, so Kaladin lashed himself back away from the mountain slope, in an enormous loop, continuously changing his lashings one after another. He made a circle in the air, then darted past the fused and straight through the crack, close enough to the walls that he could feel them pass. He broke out on the other side, exhilarated. Should he have run out of stormlight by now? He didn't use it up as quickly as he had during his early month's training. Kaladin dove along the slopes as three fused popped out of the crack to follow him. He led them around the base of the obsidian mountain, then wound back toward the Oathgate to check on Shallan and the others. As he approached, he let himself drop among the trees, still moving at incredible speed. He oriented himself as if he were diving through the chasms. Dodging these trees wasn't so different from that. He wove between them, using his body more than lashings to control his direction. His wake caused a melody of breaking glass. He exploded free of the forest and found the fourth fused, the one with his harpoon, waiting. The creature attacked, but Kaladin dodged and tore across the ground until he was passing over the sea of beads. A quick glance showed him Shallan on the platform, waving her hands over her head, the prearranged signal that she needed more time. Kaladin continued out over the sea, and beads reacted to his stormlight, rattling and surging like a wave behind him. The last fused slowed to hover in place, and the other three slowly emerged from the forest. Kaladin spun in another loop, beads rising in the air behind him like a column of water. He curved in an arc and came in toward the harpoon-wielding fused. Kaladin slapped the parchman's weapon aside, then swung the butt of his own lance up, catching the harpoon on the haft while he kicked his enemy in the chest. The harpoon went upward, the fused went backward. The creature pulled himself to a stop in the air with a lashing, then looked down at his hands, dumbfounded as Kaladin caught the harpoon in his free hand. The disarmed enemy barked something, then shook his head and took out his sword. He glided backward to join the other three, who approached with fluttering robes. One of these, the male with the white face swirled with red, moved forward alone, then pointed at Kaladin with his lance and said something.
"I don't speak your language," Kaladin called back. "But if that was a challenge, you against me, I accept. Gladly."
At that moment, his stormlight ran out.
Navani finally got the rock unwedged and shoved it out of the remnants of the doorway. Other stones fell around it, opening a path out onto the wall. What was left of it? About 15 feet from where she stood, the wall ended in a ragged, broken gap. She coughed, then tucked back a lock of hair that had escaped her braid. They'd run for cover inside one of the stone guard towers along the wall, but one side had collapsed in the shaking. It had fallen on the three soldiers who had come to protect the queen, the poor souls. Behind, Fen led her consort, who nursed a cut scalp, out over the rubble. Two other scribes had taken shelter with Navani and the queen, but most of the admirals had run in the other direction, taking shelter in the next guard tower along. That tower was now missing. The monster had swept it away. Now the creature stomped across the plain outside, though Navani couldn't see what had drawn its attention.
"The stairway," Fen said, pointing. "Looks like it survived."
The stairway down was fully enclosed in stone, and would lead into a small guard chamber at the bottom. Maybe they could find soldiers to help the wounded and search the rubble for survivors. Navani pulled open the door, letting Fen and Kamakal head down first. Navani moved to follow, but hesitated.
Damnation.
That sight beyond the wall was mesmerizing. The red lightning storm, the two monsters of stone, and the boiling, churning red mist along the right coast. It had no distinct shape, but somehow gave the impression of charging horses with the flesh ripped away. One of the unmade, certainly. An ancient spren of odium. A thing beyond time and history. Here. A company of soldiers had just finished pouring into the city through the gap. Another formed up outside to enter next. Navani felt a growing chill as she looked at them. Red eyes. Gasping softly, she left the stairwell and stumbled along the wall, reaching the broken stone edge. Oh, dear almighty, no! The ranks outside split, making way for a single parchwoman. Navani squinted, trying to see what was so special about her. One of the fused? Behind her, the red mist surged, sending tendrils to weave among the men, including one wearing shard plate, riding a brilliant white stallion. Amaram had changed sides. He joined an overwhelming force of void-bringers in all shapes and sizes. How could they fight this? How could anyone ever fight this? Navani fell to her knees above the broken edge of the wall, and then she noticed something else. Something incongruous. Something her mind refused, at first, to accept. A solitary figure had somehow gotten around the troops who had already entered the city. He now picked his way across the rubble, wearing a blue uniform, carrying a book tucked under his arm. Unaided and defenseless, Dalinar Kolin stepped into the gap in the broken wall, and there faced the nightmare, alone.
117. Champion with 9 Shadows. Beware the otherworlders, the traitors, those with tongues of sweetness but with minds that lust for blood. Do not take them in. Do not give them succor. Well were they named void-bringers, for they brought the void, the empty pit that sucks in emotion, a new god, their god. From the Aela Steely. Dalinar stepped onto the rubble, boots scraping stone. The air felt too still out here near the red storm. Stagnant. How could the air be so motionless? Amaram's army hesitated outside the gap. Some men had already gotten in, but the bulk had been forming up to wait their turn. When you rushed a city like this, you wanted to be careful not to push your own forces too hard from behind, lest you crush them up against the enemy. These kept uneven ranks, snarling, eyes red. More telling, they ignored the wealth at their feet. A field of spheres and gemstones, all done, that had been thrown out onto this plain by the thunderclast that destroyed the reserve. They wanted blood instead. Dalinar could taste their lust for the fight, the challenge. What held them back? Twin thunderclasts stomped toward the wall. A red haze drifted among the men. Images of war and death, a deadly storm. Dalinar faced it alone. One man. All that remained of a broken dream.
So, a sudden voice said from his right, what's the plan?
Dalinar frowned, then looked down to find a reshi girl with long hair dressed in a simple shirt and trousers.
Lift? Dalinar asked in Azish. Didn't you leave?
Sure did. What's wrong with your army?
They're his now.
Did you forget to feed them?
Dalinar glanced at the soldiers, standing in ranks that felt more like packs than they did true battle formations.
Perhaps I didn't try hard enough.
Were you thinking you'd fight them all on your own? Lift said. With a book?
There is someone else for me to fight here.
With the book?
Yes.
She shook her head.
Sure. All right. Why not? What do you want me to do?
The girl didn't match the conventional ideal of a Night Radiant. Not even 5 feet tall, thin and wiry, she looked more urchin than soldier. She was also all he had.
Do you have a weapon? He asked.
Nope. Can't read.
Can't?
Dalinar looked down at his book.
I meant a real weapon, Lift.
Oh, yeah, I've got one of those.
She thrust her hand to the side. Mist formed into a small glittering shard blade. Or, no, it was just a pole. A silver pole with a rudimentary crossguard. Lift shrugged.
Windle doesn't like hurting people.
Doesn't like?
Dalinar blinked.
What kind of world did he live in where swords didn't like hurting people?
A fused escaped from this city a short time ago, Dalinar said, carrying an enormous ruby. I don't know why they wanted it, and I'd rather not find out. Can you steal it back?
Sure. Easy.
You'll find it with a fused who can move with a power similar to your own. A woman.
Like I said, easy.
Easy? I think you might find...
Relax, Grandpa. Steal the rock. I can do that.
She took a deep breath, then exploded with stormlight. Her eyes turned a pearly, glowing white.
It's just us two, then?
Yes.
Right. Good luck with the army.
Dalinar looked back at the soldiers, where a figure materialized, wearing gold, holding a scepter like a cane.
It's not the armor that worries me, Dalinar said.
But Lift had already scampered away, hugging the wall and running quickly to round the outside of the army. Odium strolled up to Dalinar, trailed by a handful of fused, plus the woman Dalinar had sucked into his visions, and a shadowy spren that looked like it was made of twisting smoke.
What was that?
Odium didn't address Dalinar at first, but instead turned to his fused.
Tell Yusha I want her to stay out here and guard the prison. Kygarnas did well destroying the wall. Tell her to return to the city and climb toward the Oath Gate. If the Tisok can't secure it, she is to destroy the device and recover its gemstones. We can rebuild it as long as the Spren aren't compromised.
Two fused left, each running toward one of the towering thunderclasts. Odium placed both hands on the top of his scepter and smiled at Dalinar.
Well, friend, here we are, and the time has arrived. Are you ready?
Yes,
Dalinar said.
Good, good. Let us begin.
The two fused hovered near Adolin, out of easy reach, admiring Shallan's illusory handiwork. He did his best to blend in, waving his harpoon around crazily. He wasn't sure where Syl had gone, but Pattern seemed to be enjoying himself, humming pleasantly and swinging a glass branch. One of the fused nudged the other, then pointed at Shallan, whom they'd just noticed. Neither appeared worried that she'd open the Oath Gate, which was a bad sign. What did they know about the device that Adolin's team did not? The fused turned from Shallan and continued a conversation in a language Adolin couldn't understand. One pointed at each illusion in turn, then thrust with his spear. The other shook her head, and Adolin could almost interpret her answer. We tried stabbing each one, they keep mixing about, so it's hard to keep track. Instead, the female took out a knife and cut her hand, then flung it toward the illusions. Orange blood fell through the illusions, leaving no stain, but splattered against Adolin's cheek. Adolin felt his heart flutter, and he tried to covertly wipe the blood off, but the female gestured toward him with a satisfied grin. The male saluted her with a finger to his head, then lowered his lance and flew straight toward Adolin.
Damnation.
Adolin scrambled away, passing through an illusion of Captain Notum and causing it to diffuse. It formed back together, then blew apart a second later as the fused soared through it, lance pointed at Adolin's back. Adolin spun and flung his harpoon up to block, deflecting the lance, but the fused still smashed into him, tossing him backward. Adolin hit the stone bridge hard, smacking his head, seeing stars. Vision swimming, he reached for his harpoon, but the fused slapped the weapon away with the butt of his lance. The creature then alighted softly on the bridge, billowing robes settling. Adolin yanked out his belt knife, then forced himself to his feet, unsteady. The fused lowered its lance to a two-handed underarm grip, then waited. Knife against spear. Adolin breathed in and out, worried about the other fused who had gone for Shallan. He tried to dredge up Zahel's lessons, remembering days in the practice yard running this exact exchange. Yakimov had refused the training, laughing at the idea that a shardbearer would ever fight knife to spear. Adolin flipped the knife to grip it point down, then held it forward so he could deflect the spear thrusts. Zahel whispered to him, "Wait until the enemy thrusts with the spear, deflect it or dodge it, then grab the spear with your left hand. Pull yourself close enough to ram the knife into the enemy's neck." Right. He could do that. He'd died 7 times out of 10 doing it against Zahel, of course. "Winds bless you anyway, you old axe-hound," he thought. Adolin stepped in, testing and waiting for the thrust. When it came, Adolin shoved the lance's point aside with his knife, then grabbed at... The enemy floated backward in an unnatural motion, too fast. No ordinary human could have moved in such a way. Adolin stumbled, trying to reassess. The fused idly brought the lance back around, then fluidly rammed it right through Adolin's stomach. Adolin gasped at the sharp spike of pain, doubling over, feeling blood on his hands. The fused seemed almost bored as he yanked the lance out, the tip glistening red with Adolin's blood, then dropped the weapon. The creature landed and instead unsheathed a wicked-looking sword. He advanced, slapped away Adolin's weak attempt at a parry, and raised the sword to strike. Someone leaped onto the fused from behind. A figure in tattered clothing, a scrabbling, angry woman with brown vines instead of skin and scratched-out eyes. Adolin gaped as his deadeye raked long nails across the fused's face, causing him to stumble backward, humming, of all things. He rammed his sword into the Spren's chest, but it didn't faze her in the least. She just let out a screech like the one she'd made at Adolin when he'd tried to summon his blade and kept attacking. Adolin shook himself.
"Flee, idiot!"
Holding his wounded gut, each step causing a shock of pain, he lurched across the bridge toward Shallan.
"Employing subterfuge will not deceive us or weaken our resolve, Lightweaver," the Guardian said. "For indeed, this is not a matter of decision, but one of nature. The path remains closed."
Shallan let the illusion melt around her, then slumped down, exhausted. She'd tried pleading, cajoling, yelling, and even light weaving. It was no use. She had failed. Her illusions on the bridge were wavering and vanishing, their stormlight running out. Through them shot a fused, trailing dark energy, lance leveled directly toward Shallan. She dove to the side, barely getting out of the way. The creature passed in a whoosh, then slowed and turned for another pass. Shallan leaped to her feet first. "Pattern!" she yelled, sweeping her hands forward by instinct, trying to summon the blade. A part of her was impressed that was her reaction. Adolin would be proud. It didn't work, of course. Pattern shouted in apology from the bridge, panicked. And yet in that moment, facing the enemy bearing down its lance pointed at her heart, Shallan felt something. Pattern, or something like him, just beyond her mental reach. On the other side, and if she could just tug on it, feed it. She screamed as stormlight flowed through her, raging in her veins, reaching towards something in her pocket. A wall appeared in front of her. Shallan gasped. A sickening smack from the other side of the wall indicated that the fused had collided with it. A wall! A storming wall of worked stones, broken at the sides. Shallan looked down and found that her pocket, she was still wearing Vale's white trousers, was connected to the strange wall. What, on Roshar? She pulled out her small knife and sawed the pocket free, then stumbled back. In the center of the wall was a small bead, melded into the stone. "That's the bead I used to cross the sea down below," Shallan thought. What she'd done felt like soul-casting, yet different. Pattern ran up to her, humming as he left the bridge. Where were Adolin and Syl? "I took the soul of the wall," Shallan said, "and then made its physical form appear on this side. I think these beads are more minds than souls, but you did manifest it here. very nice. Though your touch is unpracticed. It will not stay for long.
The edges were already starting to unravel to smoke. A scraping sound on the other side indicated that the fused had not been defeated, merely stunned. Shallan turned from it and scrambled over the bridge, away from the towering sentinels. She passed some of her illusions and recovered a little of their stormlight. Now where was...
Adolin! Bleeding!
Shallan dashed over and grabbed him by the arm, trying to keep him upright as he stumbled.
"It's just a little cut," he said.
Blood seeped out between his fingers, which were pressed to his gut, right below the navel. The back of his uniform was bloody, too.
"Just a little cut? Adolin, you..." "No time," he said, leaning against her.
He nodded toward the fused she'd fought, who rose into the air over Shallan's wall.
"The other one is back behind me somewhere. Could be on us at any moment."
"Kaladin," Shallan said. "Where?" Pattern said, pointing. "He ran out of stormlight and fell into the beads over that way."
"Great."
"Take a deep breath," Shallan said to Adolin, then pulled him off the bridge with her and leaped for the beads. Lift became awesome. Her powers manifested as the ability to slide across objects without truly touching them. She could become really, really slick, which was handy, because soldiers tried to snatch her as she rounded the Alethi army. They grabbed at her unbuttoned overshirt, her arm, her hair. They couldn't hold her. She just slid away. It was like they were trying to grab hold of a song. She burst from their ranks and fell to her knees, which she'd slicked up real good. That meant she kept going, sliding on her knees away from the men with the glowing red eyes. Windle, who she knew by now was almost certainly not a Voidbringer, was a little snaking line of green beside her. He looked like a fast-growing vine, jutting with small crystals here and there.
"Oh, I don't like this," he said.
"You don't like nothing." "Now, that is not true, mistress. I like that nice town we passed back in Aesir. The one that was deserted? So peaceful."
"There," Lift thought, picking out a real Voidbringer. The type that looked like Parshman, only big and scary. This one was a woman and moved across the rocks smoothly, like she was awesome too.
"I've always wondered," Lift said. "Do you suppose they got those marble colorings on all their parts?"
"Mistress, does it matter?"
"Maybe not now," Lift admitted, glancing at the red storm.
She kept her legs slick, but her hands not slick, which let her paddle and steer herself. Going about on your knees didn't look as devious standing up, but when she tried being awesome while standing, she usually ended up crashed against a rock with her butt in the air. That fused did seem to be carrying something large in one hand, like a big gemstone. Lift paddled in that direction, which was taking her dangerously close to that Parshman army and their ships. Still, she got up pretty close before the Voidbringer woman turned and noticed. Lift slid to a halt, letting her stormlight run out. Her stomach growled, so she took a bite of some jerky she'd found in her guard's pocket. The Voidbringer said something in a sing-song voice, hefting the enormous ruby. It didn't have any stormlight, which was good, since one that big would have been bright. Like redder and brighter than Gox's face when Lift told him about how babies were made.
He should know stuff like that already. He'd been a starving thief. Hadn't he known any whores or anything?
Anyway, how to get that ruby? The Voidbringers spoke again, and while Lift couldn't figure out the words, she couldn't help feeling that the Voidbringers sounded amused. The woman pushed off with one foot, then slid on the other, easy as if she were standing on oil. She coasted for a second, then looked over her shoulder and grinned before kicking off and sliding to the left,
casually moving with a grace that made Lyf seem super stupid. "Well, starve me," Lyf said. "She's more awesome than I am."
"Do you have to use that term?" Windel asked.
"Yes, she appears to be able to access the surge of..." "Shut it," Lyf said. "Can you follow her?"
"I might leave you behind."
"I'll keep up." "Maybe." "You follow her. I'll follow you." Windel sighed, but obeyed, streaking off after the Voidbringer. Lyf followed, paddling on her knees, feeling like a pig trying to imitate a professional dancer.
"You must choose Zeth's son, Naturo," Nin said. "The Skybreakers will swear to the Dawnsingers and their law. And you? Will you join us?"
Wind rippled Zeth's clothing. All those years ago, he'd been correct. The Voidbringers had returned. Now he was to simply accept their rule?
"I don't trust myself, Aboshi," Zeth whispered. "I cannot see the right any longer. My own decisions are not trustworthy."
"Yes," Nin said, nodding, hands clasped behind his back. "Our minds are fallible. This is why we must pick something external to follow. Only in strict adherence to a code can we approximate justice." Zeth inspected the battlefield far below.
"When are we going to actually fight someone?" asked the sword on his back. "You sure do like to talk. Even more than Vasher, and he could go on and on and on."
"Aboshi," Zeth said. "When I say the third ideal, can I choose a person as the thing I obey, instead of the law?"
"Yes. Some of the Skybreakers have chosen to follow me, and I suspect that will make the transition to obeying the Dawnsingers easier for them. I would not suggest it. I feel that I'm getting worse."
A man in blue barred the way into the city below. He confronted something else, a force that Zeth could just barely sense, a hidden fire.
"You followed men before," Nin continued. "They caused your pain, Zeth's son Naturo. Your agony is because you did not follow something unchanging and pure. You picked men instead of an ideal."
"Or," Zeth said, "perhaps I was simply forced to follow the wrong men."
Kaladin thrashed in the beads, suffocating, coughing. He wasn't that deep, but which way was out? Frantic, he tried to swim toward the surface, but the beads didn't move like water, and he couldn't propel himself. Beads slipped into his mouth, pushed at his skin, pulled at him like an invisible hand, trying to drag him farther and farther into the depths, away from the light, away from the wind. His fingers brushed something warm and soft among the beads. He thrashed, trying to find it again, and a hand seized his arm. He brought his other arm around and grabbed hold of a thin wrist. Another hand took him by the front of the coat, pulling him away from the darkness, and he stumbled, finding purchase on the bottom of the sea. Lungs burning, he followed, step by step, eventually bursting from the beads to find Syl pulling him by the front of the coat. She led him up the bank, where he collapsed in a heap, spitting out spheres and wheezing. The fused he'd been fighting landed on the Oathgate platform near the two they'd left behind. As Kaladin was recovering his breath, beads nearby pulled back, revealing Shallan, Adolin, and Pattern crossing the seafloor through some kind of passage she'd made. A hallway in the depths? She was growing in her ability to manipulate the beads. Adolin was wounded. Kaladin gritted his teeth, forcing himself to his feet and stumbling over to help Shallan get the prince up onto the shore. The prince lay on his back, cursing softly, holding his gut with bloodied hands.
"Let me see it," Kaladin said, prying Adolin's fingers out of the way.
"The blood,"
Shallan started.
"The blood is the least of his worries," Kaladin said, prodding at the wound.
He's not going to bleed out from a gut wound anytime soon. But sepsis is another story. And if internal organs got cut...
Leave me,
Adolin said, coughing.
Leave you to go where?
Kaladin said, moving his fingers in the wound. Storms, the intestines were cut.
I'm out of stormlight.
Shallan's glow faded.
That was the last of what I had.
Syl gripped Kaladin's shoulder, looking toward the fused, who launched up and flew toward them, lances held high. Pattern hummed softly, nervously.
What do we do then?
Shallan asked.
No,
Kaladin thought.
Give me your knife,
Adolin said, trying to sit up.
It can't be the end.
Adolin, no, rest. Maybe we can surrender.
I can't fail him.
Kaladin looked over his shoulder toward Syl, who held him lightly by the arm. She nodded.
The words, Kaladin.
Emaram's soldiers parted around Dalinar, flooding into the city. They ignored him, and unfortunately he had to ignore them.
So, child.
Odium nodded toward the city and took Dalinar by the shoulder.
You did something marvelous in forging that coalition. You should feel proud. I'm certainly proud.
How could Dalinar fight this thing, who thought of every possibility, who planned for every outcome? How could he face something so vast, so incredible? Touching it, Dalinar could sense it stretching into infinity, permeating the land, the people, the sky, and the stone. He would break, go insane if he tried to comprehend this being, and somehow he had to defeat it?
Convince him that he can lose, the Almighty had said in vision. Appoint a champion. He will take that chance. This is the best advice I can give you. Honor had been slain, resisting this thing.
Dalinar licked his lips.
A test of champions, he said to Odium. I demand that we clash over this world.
For what purpose? Odium asked.
Killing us won't free you, will it? Dalinar said. You could rule us or destroy us, but either way, you'd still be trapped here.
Nearby, one of the Thunderclasts climbed over the wall and entered the city. The other stayed behind, stomping around near the rearguard of the army.
A contest, Dalinar said to Odium. Your freedom if you win, our lives if humans win.
Be careful what you request, Dalinar Kholin. As bondsmith you can offer this deal, but is this truly what you wish of me?
I... was it?
Windel followed the Voidbringer, and Lift followed him. They slipped back among the men of the human army. The front ranks were pouring into the city, but the opening wasn't big enough for them to all go at once. Most waited out here for their turn, cursing and grumbling at the delay. They took swipes at Lift as she tried to follow the trail of vines Windel left. Being little helped her avoid them, fortunately. She liked being little. Little people could squeeze into places others couldn't, and could go unnoticed. She wasn't supposed to get any older. The Night Watcher had promised her she wouldn't. The Night Watcher had lied. Just like a starving human would have. Lift shook her head and slipped between the legs of a soldier. Being little was nice, but it was hard not to feel like every man was a mountain towering overhead. They smashed weapons about her, speaking guttural Alethi curses. I can't do this on my knees, she thought as a sword chopped close to her shirt. I have to be like her. I have to be free. Lift zipped over the side of a small rise in the rock and managed to land on her feet. She ran for a moment, then slicked the bottoms of her feet and went into a slide. The Voidbringer woman passed ahead. She didn't slip and fall, but performed the strange walking motion, one that let her control her smooth glide. Lift tried to do the same. She trusted in her awesomeness, her stormlight. To sustain her, she held her breath. Men cursed around her, but sounds slid off Lift as she coated herself in light. The wind itself couldn't touch her. She'd been here before. She'd held for a beautiful moment between crashes, sliding on bare feet, moving free, untouched, like she was gliding between worlds. She could do it. She could... Something crashed to the ground nearby, crushing several soldiers, throwing Lift off balance and sending her into a heap. She slid to a stop and rolled over, looking up at one of the huge stone monsters. The skeletal thing raised a spiked hand and slammed it down. Lift threw herself out of the way, but the shaking from the impact sent her sprawling again. Soldiers nearby didn't seem to care that their fellows had been crushed. Eyes glowing, they scrambled for her, as if it were a contest to see who could kill her first. Her only choice was to dodge toward the stone monster. Maybe she could get so close that it... The creature pounded again, mashing three soldiers, but also slamming into Lift. The blow snapped her legs in the blink of an eye, then crushed her lower half, sending her into a screaming fit of pain. Eyes watering, she curled up on the ground. Heal. Heal. Just had to weather the pain. Just had to... Stones ground against one another overhead. She blinked away tears, looking up at the creature raising its spike high in the sky toward the sun, which was slipping behind the clouds of the deadly storm. Mistress, Windle said. His vines climbed over her as if trying to cradle her. Oh, mistress, summon me as a sword. The pain in her legs started to fade. Too slowly. She was growing hungry again, her stormlight running low. She summoned Windle as a rod, twisting against the pain and holding him toward the monster, her eyes watering with the effort. An explosion of light appeared overhead, a ball of expanding radiance. Something dropped from the middle of it, trailing smoke both black and white, glowing like a star. Mother, Windle said, what is... As the monster raised its fist to strike Lift, the spear of light hit the creature in the head and cut straight through. It divided the enormous thing in two, sending out an explosion of black smoke. The halves of the monster fell to the sides, crashing into the stone, then burned away, evaporating into blackness. Soldiers cursed and coughed, backing up as something resolved in the center of the tempest. A figure in the smoke, glowing white, and holding a jet-black shard blade that seemed to feed on the smoke, sucking it in, then letting it pour down beneath itself as a liquid blackness. White and black. A man with a shaved head, eyes glowing a light gray, stormlight rising from him. He straightened and strode through the smoke, leaving an after-image behind. Lift had seen this man before. The assassin in white. Murderer. And apparently savior. He stopped beside her.
The Blackthorn assigned you a task?
Yeah, Lift said, wiggling her toes, which seemed to be working again. There's a Voidbringer who stole a large ruby. I'm supposed to get it back.
Then stand,
the assassin said, raising his strange shard blade toward the enemy soldiers.
Our master has given us a task. We shall see it completed.
Navani scrambled across the top of the wall, alone except for crushed corpses. Dalinar, don't you dare become a martyr, she thought, reaching the stairwell. She pulled open the door at the top and started down the dark steps. What was he thinking? Facing an entire army on his own? He wasn't a young man in his prime, outfitted in shard plate. She fumbled for a sphere in her safe pouch, then eventually undid the clasp on her arm fabrial instead, using its light to guide her down the steps and into the room at the base. Where had Fen and... A hand grabbed her, pulling her to the side and slamming her against the wall. Fen and Kamakal lay here, gagged, bound tightly. A pair of men in forest green, eyes glowing red, held knives to them. A third one, wearing the knots of a captain, pressed Navani against the wall.
"What a handsome reward you'll earn me,"
the man hissed at Navani.
"Two queens! Bright Lord Amaram will enjoy this gift. That almost makes up for not being able to kill you personally, as justice for what your husband did to Bright Lord Sadeus."
Ash stumbled to a stop before a brazier. It bore delicate metalwork around the rim, a finer piece than one expected to find in such a common location. This improvised camp was where the Alethi troops had bivouacked while repairing the city. It clogged multiple streets and squares of the low ward. The unlit brazier that had stopped Ash was in front of a tent, and had perhaps been used for warmth on cold Thalen nights. 10 figures ringed the bowl. Her fingers itched. She couldn't move on, no matter how desperate her task, until she'd done it. She seized the bowl and turned it until she found the woman depicting her, marked by the iconography of the brush and the mask, symbols of creativity, pure absurdity. She pulled out her knife and sawed at the metal until she'd managed to scratch out the face. Good enough. Good enough. She dropped the brazier. Keep going. What that man Moraes had told her had better be true. If he had lied... The large tent near the wall was completely unguarded, though soldiers had run past her a short time ago, eyes glowing with the light of corrupted investiture. Odium has learned to possess men. A dark, dangerous day. He'd always been able to tempt them to fight for him, but sending Spren to bond with them? Terrible. And how had he managed to start a storm of his own? Well, this land was finally doomed. And Ash? Ash couldn't find it inside herself to care any longer. She pushed into the tent, forcibly keeping herself from looking at the rug in case it bore depictions of the heralds. There she found him, sitting alone in the dim light, staring ahead sightlessly. Dark skin, even darker than hers, and a muscled physique. A king, for all the fact that he'd never worn a crown. He was the one of the 10 who was never supposed to have borne their burden. And he'd borne it the longest anyway. "Taln," she whispered.
Renarin Kolin knew he wasn't actually a Knight Radiant. Gliss had once been a different kind of Spren, but something had changed him, corrupted him. Gliss didn't remember that very well. It had happened before they had formed their bond. Now neither knew what they'd become. Renarin could feel the Spren trembling inside him, hiding and whispering about the danger. Jasnah had found them. Renarin had seen that coming. He knelt in the ancient temple of Pelaya, and to his eyes it was full of colors. 1,000 panes of stained glass sprouted on the walls, combining and melting together, creating a panorama. He saw himself coming to Thalen City earlier in the day. He saw Dalinar talking to the monarchs, and then he saw them turning against him.
"She will hurt us. She will hurt us."
"I know, Gliss," he whispered, turning toward a specific section of stained glass. This showed Renarin kneeling on the floor of the temple. In the sequence of stained glass panels, Jasnah approached him from behind, sword raised. And then she struck him down. Renarin couldn't control what he saw or when he saw it. He had learned to read so he could understand the numbers and words that appeared under some of the images. They had shown him when the Everstorm would come. They had shown him how to find the hidden compartments in Urethiru. Now they showed his death. The future. Renarin could see what was forbidden. He wrenched his eyes away from the glass pane, showing himself and Jasnah, turning toward one even worse. In it, his father knelt before a god of gold and white.
"No, father,"
Renarin whispered.
"Please, not that. Don't do it."
"He will not be resisted," Gliss said.
"My sorrow, Renarin. I will give you my sorrow."
A pair of glory spren swung down from the skies, golden spheres. They floated and spun around Dalinar, brilliant like drops of sunlight.
Yes, Dalinar said. This is what I wish. You wish a contest of champions, Odium repeated. This is your true desire, not forced upon you. You are not beguiled or tricked in any way.
A contest of champions, for the fate of Roshar.
Very well, Odium said, then sighed softly. I agree.
That easily.
Oh, I assure you, this won't be easy.
Odium raised his eyebrows in an open, inviting way, a concerned expression.
I have chosen my champion already. I've been preparing him for a long, long time.
Amaram.
Him? A passionate man, yes, but hardly suited to this task? No. I need someone who dominates a battlefield like the sun dominates the sky.
The thrill suddenly returned to Dalinar. The red mist, which had been fading, roared back to life. Images filled his mind, memories of his youth spent fighting.
I need someone stronger than Amaram, Odium whispered. No, a man who will win no matter the cost.
The thrill overwhelmed Dalinar, choking him.
A man who has served me all his life. A man I trust. I believe I warned you that I knew you'd make the right decision. And now, here we are. No! Take a deep breath, my friend,
Odium whispered.
I'm afraid that this will hurt.
118. The Weight of It All. These Voidbringers know no songs. They cannot hear Roshar, and where they go, they bring silence. They look soft with no shell, but they are hard. They have but one heart, and it cannot ever live. From the Aela Steely.
No,
Dalinar whispered again, voice ragged as the thrill thrummed inside of him.
No, you are wrong.
Odium gripped Dalinar's shoulder.
What does she say?
She? He heard Evie crying, screaming, begging for her life as the flames took her.
Don't blame yourself, Odium said as Dalinar winced. I made you kill her, Dalinar. I caused all of this. Do you remember? I can help. Here.
Memories flooded Dalinar's mind, a devastating onslaught of images. He lived them all in detail, somehow squeezed into a moment, the thrill raging inside of him. He saw himself stab a poor soldier in the back, a young man trying to crawl to safety, crying for his mother.
I was with you then, Odium said.
He killed a far better man than himself, a High Lord who had held Teleb's loyalty. Dalinar knocked him to the ground, then slammed a poleaxe into his chest.
I was with you then.
Dalinar fought atop a strange rock formation, facing another man who knew the thrill. Dalinar dropped him to the ground with burning eyes and called it a mercy.
I was with you then.
He raged at Gavilar, anger and lust rising as twin emotions. He broke a man in a tavern, frustrated that he'd been held back from enjoying the fight. He fought on the borders of Yakaved, laughing, corpses littering the ground. He remembered every moment of the carnage. He felt each death like a spike driven into his soul. He began to weep for the destruction.
It's what you needed to do, Dalinar, Odium said. You made a better kingdom. So much pain. Blame me, Dalinar. It wasn't you. You saw red when you did those things. It was my fault. Accept that. You don't have to hurt.
Dalinar blinked, meeting Odium's eyes.
Let me have the pain, Dalinar, Odium said. Give it to me, and never feel guilty again.
No, Dalinar hugged the Way of Kings close. No, I can't.
Oh, Dalinar, what does she say?
No.
Have you forgotten? Here, let me help.
And he was back in that day, the day he killed Ebby. Zeth found purpose in wielding the sword. It screamed at him to destroy evil, even if evil was obviously a concept that the sword itself could not understand. Its vision was occluded, like Zeth's own, a metaphor. How was a twisted soul like his to decide who should die? Impossible. And so he put his trust in someone else, someone whose light peeked through the shadow. Dalinar Kholin, Knight Radiant. He would know. This choice was not perfect, but, stones unhallowed, it was the best he could manage. It brought him some small measure of peace as he swept through the enemy army. The sword screamed at him, "Destroy!" Anyone he so much as nicked popped into black smoke. Zeth laid waste to the red-eyed soldiers who kept coming, showing no fear, screaming as if they thirsted for death. It was a drink that Zeth was all too good at serving. He wielded Stormlight in one hand, lashing any men who drew too close, sending them flipping into the air or crashing backward into their fellows. With the other hand, he swept the sword through their ranks. He moved on nimble feet, his own body lashed upward just enough to lighten him. Skybreakers didn't have access to all of the lashings, but the most useful and most deadly were still his.
Remember the gemstone.
A phantom sense called to him, a desire to continue killing, to revel in the butchery. Zeth rejected it, sick. He had never enjoyed this. He could never enjoy this. The Voidbringer with the gemstone had slipped away, moving on to swift feet. Zeth pointed the sword, a piece of him terrified by how quickly it was chewing through his own stormlight, and lashed himself to follow. He plowed through soldiers, men bursting into smoke, seeking that one individual. The Voidbringer turned at the last moment, dancing away from his sword. Zeth lashed himself downward, then spun in a sweeping arc, towing black smoke, almost liquid, behind his sword as he destroyed men in a grand circle.
Evil!
The sword cried. Zeth leaped for the Voidbringer woman, but she dropped to the ground and slid on the stone as if it were greased. His sword swung over her head, and she pushed herself backward toward him, sliding right past his legs. There she swept gracefully to her feet and seized the sheath off Zeth's back, where he'd tied it for safekeeping. It broke free. When Zeth turned to attack, she blocked the sword with its own sheath. How had she done that? Was there something about the silvery metal that Zeth didn't know? She blocked his next few attacks, then ducked away from his attempts to lash her. The sword was growing frustrated.
Destroy! Destroy! Destroy!
Black veins began to grow around Zeth's hand, creeping toward his upper arm. He struck again, but she simply slipped away, moving across the ground as if natural laws had no purchase on her. Other soldiers piled in, and the pain started up Zeth's arm as he worked death among them.
Yasna stopped, one pace behind Renarin. She could hear his whispers clearly now.
Father! Oh, father!
The young man whipped his head in one direction, then another, seeing things that weren't there.
He sees, not what is, but what is to come, Ivory said. Odium's power, Yasna.
Town, Ash whispered, kneeling before him. Oh, Town.
The herald stared forward with dark eyes.
I am Talanel Elin, herald of war. The time of the return, the desolation is near at hand.
Town.
Ash took his hand.
It's me. It's Ash.
We must prepare. You will have forgotten much.
Please, Town.
Kallak will teach you to cast bronze.
He just continued on, repeating the same words over and over and over.
Kaladin fell to his knees on the cold obsidian of Shadesmar. Fused descended around them, six figures in brilliant flapping clothing. He had a single slim hope. Each ideal he'd spoken had resulted in an outpouring of power and strength. He licked his lips and tried whispering it.
I will.
He thought of friends lost. Malop, Jax, Beld, and Pedin.
Say it, Stormyu.
Rod and Mart. Bridgemen he'd failed. And before them, slaves he'd tried to save. Goshal. Nalma. Caught in a trap like a beast. A wind spren appeared near him, like a line of light. Then another.
A single hope. The words. Say the words.
Oh, mother! Oh, cultivation! Windle cried as they watched the assassin murder his way across the field. What have we done?
We've pointed him away from us, Lift said, as she perched on a boulder, her eyes wide. You'd rather he was close by?
Windle continued to whimper, and Lift kind of understood. That was a lot of killing that the assassin did. Red-eyed men who seemed to have no light left in them, true, but storms. She'd lost track of the woman with the gemstone, but at least the army seemed to be flowing away from Zeth, leaving him fewer people to kill. He stumbled, slowing, then dropped to his knees. Uh-oh. Lift summoned Windle as a rod in case the assassin lost his starvin' mind, what was left of it, and attacked her. She slipped off the rock, then ran over. He held the strange shard blade before himself. It continued to leak black liquid that vaporized as it streamed toward the ground. His hand had gone all black.
"I," Zeth said, "I have lost the sheath."
"Drop the sword!"
"I can't,"
Zeth said, teeth gritted.
"It holds to me. Feasting upon my stormlight, it will soon consume me."
"Storms, storms, storms, storms! Right, right. Lift looked around. The army was flooding into the city. The second stone monster was stomping across the ancient ward, stepping on buildings. Dalinar Kholin still stood before the gap. Maybe he could help? "Come on," Lift said.
"Kill the man," said the captain holding Navani.
He swept his hand toward old Kamakal, Fen's consort.
"We don't need him."
Fen screamed against her gag, but she was held tightly. Navani carefully wiggled her safe hand fingers out of her sleeve, then touched her other arm and the fabrial there, flipping a latch. Small knobs extended from the front of the device just above her wrist. Kamakal struggled to stand. He seemed to want to face his death with dignity, but the other two soldiers didn't give him that honor. They pushed him back against the wall, one pulling out a dagger. Navani seized the arm of the man holding her, then pressed the knobs of her pain fabrial against his skin. He screamed and dropped, writhing in agony. One of the others turned toward her, and she pressed the pain reel against his uplifted hand. She'd tested the device on herself, of course, so she knew what it felt like. 1,000 needles being shoved into your skin, under your nails, into your eyes. The second man wet himself as he dropped. The last one managed to cut a gash in her arm before she sent him to the ground, spasming. Bother. She flipped the switch on the pain reel, drawing away the agony of the cut. Then she took the knife and quickly cut Fen's bonds. As the queen freed Kamakal, Navani bound her painless wound.
"These will recover soon," Navani said. "We may need to dispatch them before that happens."
Kamakal kicked the man who had almost slit his throat, then cracked the door into the city. A troop of men with glowing eyes rushed past. The entire area was overrun with them.
These are the least of our trouble, it seems, the aging man said, shutting the door.
Back up to the wall, then, Fenn said. We might be able to spot friendly troops from that vantage. Navani nodded, and Fenn led the way up. At the top, they barred the door. There were bars on both sides. You wanted to be able to lock out enemies who had seized the wall, and also ones who had broken through the gates. Navani surveyed their options. A quick glance revealed that the streets were indeed held by Amaram's troops. Some groups of Thalans held ground farther up, but they were falling quickly.
By Kalek, storms and passions alike, Kamakal said. What is that?
He'd noticed the red mist on the north side of the battlefield, with its horrific images forming and breaking apart. Shadows of soldiers dying, of skeletal features, of charging horses. It was a grand, intimidating sight. But Dalinar drew her eyes. Standing alone, surrounded by enemy soldiers, and facing something she could just barely sense. Something vast. Something unimaginable. Something angry.
Dalinar lived in two places. He saw himself crossing a darkened landscape, dragging his shard blade behind him. He was on the field at Thalen City with Odium, but he was also in the past, approaching Rathalas, urged on by the boiling red anger of the thrill. He returned to the camp, to the surprise of his men, like a spren of death, coated in blood, eyes glowing, glowing red. He ordered the oil brought. He turned toward a city where Evie was imprisoned, where children slept, where innocent people hid and prayed and burned glyph wards and wept.
Please, Dalinar whispered in Thalen City, don't make me live it again.
Oh, Dalinar, Odium said,
you will live it again and again until you let go. You can't carry this burden. Please, give it to me. I drove you to do this. It wasn't your fault.
Dalinar pulled the Way of Kings close against his chest, clutching it like a child with his blanket in the night. But a sudden flash of light blasted in front of him, accompanied by a deafening crack. Dalinar stumbled backward. Lightning. That had been lightning. Had it struck him? No. It had somehow struck only the book. Burned pages fluttered around him, singed and smoldering. It had been blasted right from his hands. Odium shook his head.
The words of a man long dead, long failed.
Overhead, the sun finally passed behind the clouds of the storm, and all fell into darkness. Slowly, the flames of the burning pages went out. Teft huddled someplace dark. Maybe the darkness would hide his sins. But in the distance he heard shouting, men fighting, Bridge 4 dying. Kaladin stuttered, the words stumbling. He thought of his men from Amaram's army, Dalet and his squad, slain either by Shallan's brother or by Amaram. Such good friends who had fallen. And then, of course, he thought of Tien. Dalinar fell to his knees. A few glory sprens swirled around him, but Odium batted them away and they faded. In the back of his mind, the Stormfather wept. He saw himself step up to where Evie was imprisoned. That tomb in the rock. Dalinar tried to look away, but the vision was everywhere. He didn't merely see it, he lived it. He ordered Evie's death and listened to her screams.
Please.
Odium wasn't done with him. Dalinar had to watch the city burn, hear the children die. He gritted his teeth, groaning in agony. Before, his pains had driven him to drink. There was no drink now, just the thrill. He had always craved it. The thrill had made him live. Without it, he'd been dead. He slumped, bowing his head, listening to the tears of a woman who had believed in him. He'd never deserved her. The Stormfather's weeping faded as Odium somehow shoved the Spren away, separating them. That left Dalinar alone.
So alone.
You're not alone, Dalinar, Odium said, going down on one knee beside him.
I'm here. I've always been here.
The thrill boiled within, and Dalinar knew. He knew he'd always been a fraud. He was the same as Amaram. He had an honest reputation, but was a murderer on the inside, a destroyer, a child killer.
Let go, Odium whispered.
Dalinar squeezed his eyes shut, trembling, hands tense as he hunched over and clawed the ground. It hurt so badly to know that he'd failed them. Navani, Adolin, Elikar, Gavilar. He couldn't live with this. He couldn't live with her tears.
Give it to me,
Odium pled. Dalinar ripped his fingernails off, but the pain of the body couldn't distract him. It was nothing beside the agony of his soul, of knowing what he truly was. Zeth tried to walk toward Dalinar. The darkness had grown up his arm, and the sword drank his last wisps of stormlight. There was
a lesson in this, wasn't there? There had to be. Nin wanted him to learn.
He fell to the ground, still holding the sword as it screamed mindlessly.
Destroy evil!
The little radiant girl scrambled to him. She looked toward the sky as the sun vanished behind clouds. Then she took Zeth's head in her hands.
No,
he tried to croak.
It will take you too.
She breathed life into him somehow, and the sword drank of it freely. Her eyes went wide as the black veins began to grow up her fingers and hands. Renarin didn't want to die. But strangely, he found himself welcoming Jasnah's strike. Better to die than to live to see what was happening to his father. For he saw the future. He saw his father in black armor, a plague upon the land. He saw the Blackthorn return, a terrible scourge with 9 shadows. Odium's champion.
He's going to fall, Renarin whispered. He's already fallen. He belongs to the enemy now. Dalinar Kor'lin is no more.
Venli shivered on the plain, near Odium. Timber had been pulsing to peace, but now she quieted. 20 or 30 yards away, a figure in white clothing collapsed to the ground, a little girl at his side. Nearer to her, Dalinar Kor'lin, the man who had resisted, slumped forward, head bowed, holding one hand against his chest and trembling. Odium stepped back, his appearance that of a parchment with golden carapace.
It is done, he said, looking toward Venli and the gathered group of fused. You have a leader.
We must follow one of them?
Tarash asked.
A human?
Venli's breath caught. There had been no respect in that tone. Odium smiled.
You will follow me, Tarash, or I will reclaim that which gives you persistent life. I care not for the shape of the tool, only that it cuts.
Tarash bowed his head. Stone crunched as a figure in glittering shard plate walked up to them, carrying a shard blade in one hand and, strangely, an empty sheath in the other. The human had his faceplate up, exposing red eyes. He tossed the silvery sheath to the ground.
I was told to deliver that to you. Well done, Meridas, Odium said. Aberay, could you provide this human with an appropriate housing for Yelignar?
One of the fused stepped forward and proffered a small, uncut smokestone toward the human, Meridas.
"And what is this?" Meridas asked. "The fulfillment of my promise to you," Odium said. "Swallow it."
"What?"
"If you wish for the promised power, ingest that. Then try to control the one who follows. But be warned, the queen at Kolinar tried this, and the power consumed her."
Meridas held up the gemstone, inspecting it, then glanced toward Dalinar Kolin.
"So, you've been speaking to him all this time, too?" "Even longer than I've been speaking to you. Can I kill him?" "Someday. Assuming I don't let him kill you."
Odium rested his hand on the shoulder of the huddled Dalinar Kolin.
"It's done, Dalinar. The pain has passed. Stand up and claim the station you were born to obtain."
Kaladin thought, finally, of Dalinar. Could Kaladin do it? Could he really say these words? Could he mean them? The fused swept close. Adolin bled. You know what you need to do.
I can't,
Kaladin finally whispered, tears streaming down his cheeks.
I can't lose him. But, oh, Almighty, I can't save him.
Kaladin bowed his head, sagging forward, trembling. He couldn't say those words. He wasn't strong enough. Syl's arms enfolded him from behind, and he felt softness as her cheek pressed against the back of his neck. She pulled him tight as he wept, sobbing at his failure.
Yasna raised her blade over Renarin's head. "Make it quick. Make it painless. Most threats to a dynasty came from within. Renarin was obviously corrupted. She'd known there was a problem the moment she'd read that he had predicted the Everstorm. Now Yasna had to be strong. She had to do what was right, even when it was so, so hard. She prepared to swing, but then Renarin turned and looked at her. Tears streaming down his face, he met her eyes, and he nodded. Suddenly they were young again. He was a trembling child, weeping on her shoulder for a father who didn't seem to be able to feel love. Little Renarin, always so solemn, always misunderstood, laughed at, and condemned by people who said similar things about Yasna behind her back. Yasna froze, as if standing at the edge of a cliff. Wind blew through the temple, carrying with it a pair of spren in the form of golden spheres, bobbing in the currents. Yasna dismissed her sword. "Yasna?" Ivory said, appearing back in the form of a man, clinging to her collar. Yasna fell to her knees, then pulled Renarin into an embrace. He broke down, crying, like he had as a boy, burying his head in her shoulder.
"What's wrong with me?" Renarin asked. "Why do I see these things? I thought I was doing something right with Gliss, but somehow it's all wrong."
"Hush," Yasna whispered. "We'll find a way through it, Renarin. Whatever it is, we'll fix it. We'll survive this somehow." Storms. The things he'd said about Dalinar.
"Yasna," Ivory said, becoming full size as he stepped free of her collar. He leaned down.
"Yasna, this is right. Somehow it is."
He seemed completely stunned.
"It is not what makes sense, yet it is still right. How? How is this thing?"
Renarin pulled back from her, his tear-stained eyes going wide.
"I saw you kill me."
"It's all right, Renarin. I'm not going to."
"But don't you see? Don't you understand what that means?"
Yasna shook her head.
"Yasna," Renarin said, "my vision was wrong about you.
what I see, it can be wrong.
Alone. Dalinar held a fist to his chest. So alone. It hurt to breathe, to think. But something stirred inside his fist. He opened bleeding fingers. The most important. Inside his fist, he somehow found a golden sphere. A solitary glory sprang. The most important step a man can take. It's not the first one, is it? It's the next one. Always the next step, Dalinar. Trembling, bleeding, agonized, Dalinar forced air into his lungs and spoke a single, ragged sentence. You cannot have my pain.
119. Unity. As I began my journey, I was challenged to defend why I insisted on traveling alone. They called it irresponsible, an avoidance of duty and obligation. Those who said this made an enormous mistake of assumption. From The Way of Kings, Postscript. Odium stepped back.
Dalinar, what is this? You cannot have my pain. Dalinar.
Dalinar forced himself to his feet.
You cannot have my pain. Be sensible. I killed those children,
Dalinar said.
No, I burned the people of Rathalos. I was there, influencing you. You cannot have my pain!
Dalinar bellowed, stepping toward Odium. The god frowned. His fused companions shied back, and Amaram raised a hand before his eyes and squinted. Were those glory sprens spinning around Dalinar?
I did kill the people of Rathalos, Dalinar shouted. You might have been there. But I made the choice. I decided.
He stilled.
I killed her. It hurts so much, but I did it. I accept that. You cannot have her. You cannot take her from me again.
Dalinar, Odium said.
What do you hope to gain keeping this burden?
Dalinar sneered at the god.
If I pretend I didn't do those things, it means that I can't have grown to become someone else. A failure.
Something stirred inside of Dalinar. A warmth that he had known once before. A warm, calming light.
Unite them. Journey before destination, Dalinar said. It cannot be a journey. If it doesn't have a beginning!
A thunderclap sounded in his mind. Suddenly, awareness poured back into him. The Stormfather, distant, feeling frightened, but also surprised.
Dalinar? I will take responsibility for what I have done,
Dalinar whispered.
If I must fall, I will rise each time a better man.
Renarin ran after Jasnah through the loft wards of the city. People clogged the streets, but she didn't use those. She leaped off buildings, dropping onto rooftops of the tiers below. She ran across each of these, then leaped down to the next street. Renarin struggled to follow, afraid of his weakness, confused by the things he'd seen. He dropped to a rooftop, feeling sudden pain at the fall, though Stormlight healed that. He limped after her until the pain left.
Jasnah!
He called.
Jasnah, I can't keep up!
She stopped at the edge of a rooftop. He reached her and she took his arm.
You can keep up, Renarin. You're a Knight Radiant. I don't think I'm a Radiant, Jasnah. I don't know what I am.
An entire stream of glory spren flew past them, hundreds in a sweeping formation that curved toward the base of the city. Something was glowing down there, a beacon in the dim light of an overcast city. I know what you are, Jasnah said. You're my cousin. Family, Renarin. Hold my hand. Run with me. He nodded, and she towed him after her, leaping from the rooftop, ignoring the monstrous creature that climbed up nearby. Jasnah seemed focused on only one thing, that light.
Unite them.
Glory Spren streamed around Dalinar. Thousands of golden spheres, more Spren than he'd ever seen in one place. They swirled around him in a column of golden light. Beyond it, Odium stumbled back.
So small, Dalinar thought. Has he always looked that small?
Syl looked up. Kaladin turned to see what had drawn her attention. She looked past the fused who had landed to attack. She was staring toward the ocean of beads and the trembling lights of souls above it.
Syl?
She pulled him tight.
Maybe you don't have to save anyone, Kaladin. Maybe it's time for someone to save you.
Unite them.
Dalinar thrust his left hand to the side, plunging it between realms, grabbing hold of the very fabric of existence. The world of minds, the realm of thought. He thrust his right hand to the other side, touching something vast, something that wasn't a place. It was all places in one. He'd seen this before, in the moment when Odium had let him glimpse the spiritual realm. Today, he held it in his hand. The fused scrambled away. Amaram pushed down his faceplate, but that wasn't enough. He stumbled back, arm raised. Only one person remained in place. A young Parsh woman, the one that Dalinar had visited in the visions.
What are you?
She whispered as he stood with arms outstretched, holding to the lands of mind and spirit. He closed his eyes, breathing out, listening to a sudden stillness. And within it, a simple, quiet voice. A woman's voice, so familiar to him.
I forgive you.
Dalinar opened his eyes and knew what the Parsh woman saw in him. Swirling clouds, glowing light, thunder and lightning.
I am unity.
He slammed both hands together and combined three realms into one. Shadesmar exploded with light. Fused screamed as a wind blasted them away, though Kaladin felt nothing. Beads clattered and roared. Kaladin shaded his eyes with his hand. The light faded, leaving a brilliant glowing pillar in the middle of the sea. Beneath it, the beads locked together, turning into a highway of glass. Kaladin blinked, taking Shallan's hand as she helped him to his feet. Adolin had forced himself to sit up, holding his bloodied stomach.
What is it? Honor's perpendicularity, Syl whispered. A well of power that pierces all three realms.
She looked to Kaladin.
A pathway home.
Taln gripped Ash's hand. Ash looked at his fingers, thick and calloused. Thousands of years could come and pass, and she could lose lifetimes to the dream, but those hands, she'd never forget those hands.
Ash,
he said. She looked up at him, then gasped and raised her fingers to her lips.
How long?
He asked.
Taln.
She gripped his hand in both of hers.
I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry.
How long?
They say it's been 4 millennia. I don't always note the passing of time.
4,000 years?
She held his hand tighter.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
He pulled his hand from hers and stood up, walking through the tent. She followed, apologizing again, but what good were words? They'd betrayed him. Taln brushed aside the front drapes and stepped out. He looked up at the city expanding above them, at the sky, at the wall. Soldiers in breastplates and chain rushed past to join a fight farther along.
4,000 years?
Talm asked again.
Ash, we couldn't continue. We thought...
Ash. He took her hand again.
What a wonderful thing.
Wonderful.
We left you, Talm. What a gift you gave them. Time to recover for once between desolations. Time to progress. They never had a chance before. But this time, yes, maybe they do. No, Talm, you can't be like this. A wonderful thing indeed, Ash. You can't be like this, Talm. You have to hate me. Hate me, please.
He turned from her, but still held her hand, pulling her after him.
Come. He's waiting.
Who? She asked.
I don't know.
Teft gasped in the darkness.
Can you see it, Teft? The Spren whispered. Can you feel the words?
I'm broken.
Who isn't? Life breaks us, Teft. Then we fill the cracks with something stronger.
I make myself sick.
Teft, she said, a glowing apparition in the darkness. That's what the words are about.
Oh, Kalek. The shouts, fighting, his friends.
I storm you. Be a man for once in your life.
Teft licked his lips and spoke.
I will protect those I hate. Even if the one I hate most is myself.
Renarin fell to the last level of the city, the Low Ward. He stumbled to a stop there, his hand slipping from Yasna's. Soldiers marched through these streets with eyes like embers.
Yasna! He called. Emaram's soldiers changed sides. They serve Odium now. I saw it in vision.
She ran right toward them.
Yasna!
The first soldier swung his sword at her. Yasna ducked the weapon, then shoved her hand against him, throwing him backward. He crystallized in the air, slamming into the next man, who caught the transformation like a disease. He slammed into another man, knocking him back, as if the full force of Yasna's shove had transferred to him. He crystallized a moment later. Yasna spun, a shard blade forming in her gloved safe hand, her skirt rippling as she sliced through 6 men in one sweep. The sword vanished as she slapped her hand into the wall of a building behind her, and that wall puffed away into smoke, causing the roof to crash down, blocking the alley between buildings, where other soldiers had been approaching. She swept her hand upward, and air coalesced into stone, forming steps that she took, barely breaking her stride, to climb to the rooftop of the next building. Renarin gaped. That... how?
It will be great, vast, wonderful...
Gliss said from within Renarin's heart.
It will be beautiful, Renarin. Look!
A well blossomed inside of him. Power like he'd never felt before. An awesome, overwhelming strength. Stormlight unending. A source of it so vast he was stunned.
Yasna!
He shouted, then belatedly ran up the steps she'd created, feeling so alive that he wanted to dance. Wouldn't that be a sight? Renarin Kolin, dancing on a rooftop while... He slowed, gaping again as he looked through a gap in the wall and saw a column of light. Rising higher and higher, it stretched toward the clouds.
Fen and her consort backed away from the storm of light. Navani exulted in it. She leaned out far over the side of the wall, laughing like a fool. Glory Spren streamed around her, brushing her hair, flowing toward the already impossible number that coursed around Dalinar in a pillar that stretched hundreds of feet into the air. Then lights sparked to life in a wave across the field, the top of the wall, the street below. Gemstones that had been lying ignored, scattered from the broken bank, drank in stormlight from Dalinar. They lit the ground with 1,000 pinpricks of color.
No,
Odium screamed. He stepped forward.
No, we killed you. We killed you!
Dalinar stood within a pillar of light and spinning glory spren, one hand to each side clutching the realms that made up reality. Forgiven. The pain he'd so recently insisted that he would keep started to fade away on its own.
These words are accepted,
the Stormfather said, sounding stunned.
How? What have you done?
Odium stumbled back.
Kill him! Attack him!
The Parsh woman didn't move, but Amaram lethargically lowered his hand from his face, then stepped forward, summoning his shard blade. Dalinar took his hand from the glowing pillar and held it out.
You can change,
he said.
You can become a better person. I did. Journey before destination.
No, Amaram said.
No. He'll never forgive me.
The bridge man?
Not him,
Amaram tapped his chest.
Him. I'm sorry, Dalinar.
He raised a familiar shard blade. Dalinar's shard blade, Oathbringer. Passed from tyrant to tyrant to tyrant. A portion of light split from Dalinar's column. Amaram swung Oathbringer with a shout, but the light met the shard blade with an explosion of sparks, throwing Amaram backward, as if the strength of Shardplate were no more than that of a child. The light resolved into a man with shoulder-length wavy hair, a blue uniform, and a silvery spear in his hand. A second glowing form split off into Shallan Devar. Brilliant red hair streaming behind her, a long thin shard blade with a slight curve forming in her hands. And then, blessedly, Adolin appeared.
Mistress! Windle said. Oh, mistress!
For once, Lift didn't have the will to tell him to shut up. She focused everything on those tendrils creeping up her arms like deep, dark vines. The assassin lay on the ground, staring upward, practically covered in those vines. Lift held them at bay, teeth gritted, her will against the darkness until... light. Like a sudden detonation, a force of light flashed across the field. Gemstones on the ground flared up, capturing stormlight, and the assassin screamed, drawing in light like glowing mist. The vines shriveled as the sword's thirst was slaked by the stormlight. Lift fell back on the stone and pried her hands off Zeth's head.
I knew I liked you, a voice said in Lift's mind.
The sword... So it was a spren?
You almost ate him, Lift said. You almost starvin' ate me.
Oh, I wouldn't do that, the voice said. She seemed completely baffled, voice growing slow, like she was drowsy.
But maybe I was just really, really hungry.
Well... Lift supposed she couldn't blame someone for that. The assassin climbed unsteadily to his feet. His face was crisscrossed with lines where the vines had been, that somehow left his skin gray in streaks, the color of stone. Lift's arms bore the same.
Huh. Zeth walked toward the glowing column of light, leaving an afterimage behind him.
Come, he said.
Elokar,
Dalinar thought. But no one else came through the column of light. And he knew. Knew somehow that the king was not coming. He closed his eyes and accepted that grief. He had failed the king in many ways. Stand up, he thought, and do better. He opened his eyes and slowly his column of glory spren faded. The power within him withdrew, leaving him exhausted. Fortunately, the field was covered in glittering gemstones, stormlight in plenty.
A direct conduit to the spiritual realm,
the Stormfather said.
You renew spheres, Dalinar? We are connected. I was bonded to men before. This never happened then.
Honor was alive then. We are something different. His remnants, your soul, my will. Kaladin Stormblessed stepped up beside Dalinar before the rubble of the wall, and Shallan Devar stood on the other side. Yasna emerged from the city and surveyed the scene with a critical air while Renarin popped out behind her, then cried out and ran for Adolin. He grabbed his older brother in an embrace, then gasped. Adolin was wounded? Good lad, Dalinar thought, as Renarin immediately set to healing his brother. Two more people crossed the battlefield. Lift, he had anticipated. But the assassin? Zeth scooped the silvery sheath off the ground and slammed his black shard blade into it before stepping up to join Dalinar.
Skybreaker, Dalinar thought, counting them off. Edge Dancer? That was seven.
He would have expected three more.
There, the Stormfather said. Behind your niece.
Two more people appeared in the shadow of the wall. A large, powerful man with an impressive physique and a woman with long, dark hair. Their dark skin marked them as Makabaki, perhaps Azish, but their eyes were wrong.
I know them, the Stormfather said, sounding surprised. I know them from long, long ago. Memories of days when I did not fully live. Dalinar, you are in the presence of divinities.
I've grown accustomed to it, Dalinar said, turning back toward the field. Odium had retreated into nothingness, though his fused remained, as did most of the troops, and one strange spren, the one like black smoke. Beyond it, of course, the thrill still encompassed the north side of the landing near the water. Amaram had 10,000 men, and maybe half of those had made it into the city so far. They had wilted before Dalinar's display, but now... Wait. Those two only make nine, he thought to the Stormfather. Something told him there should be one more.
I don't know. Perhaps they haven't been found yet. Regardless, even with the bond, you are just one man. Radiants are not immortal. How do you face this army?
Dalinar, Kaladin said. Order, sir. The enemy ranks were recovering. They lifted weapons, eyes glowing deep red. Amaram stirred as well, some 20 feet away. The thrill had Dalinar most worried, however. He knew what it could do. He glanced down at his arm and noticed something. The lightning that had struck him earlier, shredding the Way of Kings, had broken his arm fabrial. The clasp was undone, and Dalinar could see the tiny gemstones Navani had placed to power it. Sir? Kaladin asked again.
The enemy is trying to crush this city, Captain, Dalinar said, lowering his arm. We're going to hold it against his forces.
Seven Radiants? Yasna said, skeptical. Uncle, that seems a tall order, even if one of us is, apparently, the storming assassin in white.
I serve Dalinar Kholin, Zeth Sansan Valano whispered.
His face, for some reason, was streaked with gray.
I cannot know truth. So I follow one who does.
Whatever we do, Shallan said, we should do it quickly, before those soldiers...
Renarin! Dalinar barked.
Sir!
Renarin said, scrambling forward.
We need to hold out until troops arrive from Urethiru. Ben doesn't have the numbers to fight alone. Get to the Oathgate, stop that thunderclast up there from destroying it, and open the portal.
Sir!
Renarin saluted.
Shallan, we don't have an army yet, Dalinar said. Lightweave one up for us, and keep these soldiers busy. They're consumed by a bloodlust that I suspect will make them easier to distract. Yasna, the city we're defending happens to have a big storming hole in its wall. Can you hold that hole and stop anyone who tries to get through?
She nodded, thoughtful.
What about me?
Kaladin asked. Dalinar pointed at Amaram, who was climbing to his feet in his shard plate.
He's going to try to kill me for what I do next, and I could use a bodyguard. As I recall, you have a score to settle with the High Lord.
You could say that.
Lift, I believe I already gave you an order, Take the assassin and get me that ruby. Together we hold this city until Renarin returns with troops. Any questions?
Lift said. Could you maybe tell me where to get something to eat?
Dalinar glanced at her. Something to eat?
There should be a supply dump just inside the wall.
Thanks.
Dalinar sighed, then started walking toward the water.
Sir,
Kaladin called. Where are you going?
The enemy brought a very big stick to this battle, Captain. I'm going to take it away.
Rough map of the Battle of Thalen Field. Annotated by Navani Colin. The enemy landed a large fleet here, just north of the destroyed docks. Northward of that, the Thrill emerged from the ocean in the form of a large red cloud, manifesting many shapes. The bulk of the enemy army formed up here before the city wall. The wall was broken here. The Gemstone Reserve is at the boundary between the Low Ward and the Ancient Ward. The Temples of the Ten Heralds are located at the top of the city, in the Royal Ward. At the north end of the Royal Ward is the Oathgate platform.
120. The Spear That Would Not Break. If the journey itself is indeed the most important piece rather than the destination itself, then I traveled not to avoid duty, but to seek it. From the Way of Kings, Postscript. Kaladin rose into the sky alive with stormlight. Below him, Dalinar walked toward the red mist. Though tendrils of it moved among the soldiers of Amaram's army, the bulk of it swirled closer to the coast, to the right of the bay and the destroyed docks. Storms, Kaladin felt good to be in the real world again. Even with the Everstorm dominating the sun, this place felt so much more bright than Shadesmar. A group of Windspren dodged around him, though the air was relatively still. Perhaps they were the ones who had come to him on the other side, the ones he had failed.
Kaladin, Syl said, you don't need another reason to berate yourself.
She was right. Storms, he could be down on himself sometimes. Was that the flaw that had prevented him from speaking the words of the fourth ideal? For some reason, Syl sighed.
Oh, Kaladin.
We'll talk about it later, he said. For now, he'd been given a second chance to protect Dalinar Colin. Stormlight raging inside of him, the Syl's spear a comfortable weight in his hand, he lashed himself downward and crashed to the stones near Amaram. The High Lord, in turn, fell to his knees.
What?
Kaladin thought. Amaram was coughing. He tipped his head back, faceplate up, and groaned. Had he just swallowed something? Adolin prodded at his stomach. Beneath the blood-stained rip, he felt only smooth, new skin. Not even a hint of an ache. For a time, he'd been sure he would die. He'd been there before. Months ago, he'd felt it when Sadeus had withdrawn, leaving the Colin troops alone and surrounded on the shattered plains. This had been different. Staring up at that black sky and those unnatural clouds, feeling suddenly, appallingly fragile. And then light. His father, the great man Adolin could never match, somehow embodying the Almighty himself. Adolin couldn't help feeling that he hadn't been worthy to step into that light. Here he was anyway. The radiance broke apart to do Dalinar's bidding, though Shallan knelt to check on Adolin.
How do you feel?
Do you realize how fond I was of this jacket?
Oh, Adolin.
Really, Shallan. Surgeons should take more care with the clothing they cut open. If a man's going to live, he'll want that shirt. And if he dies, well, he should at least be well-dressed on his deathbed. She smiled, then glanced over her shoulder toward the troops with red eyes. Go, he said. I'll be fine. Save the city. Be radiant, Shallan. She kissed him, then turned and stood. That white clothing seemed to glow, the red hair a striking swatch, as stormlight rose from her. pattern appeared as a shard blade with a faint, almost invisible latticework running up the length. She wove her power, and an army climbed from the ground around her. In Urethiru, she'd made an army of a score to distract the unmade. Now, hundreds of illusions rose around her. Soldiers, shopkeepers, washwomen, scribes, all drawn from her pages. They glowed brilliantly, light streaming from them, as if each were a knight radiant. Adolin climbed to his feet and came face to face with an illusion of himself wearing a Colin uniform. The illusory Adolin glowed with stormlight and floated a few inches off the ground. She'd made him a windrunner. I can't take that. He turned toward the city. His father had been focused on the Radiance and had neglected to give Adolin a specific duty. So maybe he could help the defenders inside. Adolin picked his way across the rubble and through the broken wall. Yasna stood right inside, hands on hips, as if she were surveying a mess left by rampaging children. The gap opened into an unremarkable city square, dominated by barracks and storehouses. Fallen troops, wearing either Thalen or Sadius uniforms, indicated a recent clash here, but most of the enemy seemed to have moved on. Shouts and clangs sounded from nearby streets. Adolin reached for a discarded sword, then paused and, feeling a fool, summoned his shard blade. He braced himself for a scream, but none came, and the blade fell into his hand after 10 heartbeats. "I'm sorry," he said, lifting the glistening weapon. "And thank you." He headed toward one of the nearby clashes where men were shouting for help. Zeth of the Skybreakers envied Kaladin, the one they called Stormblessed, in the honor of protecting Dalinar Kholin. But of course he would not complain. He had chosen his oath, and he would do as his master demanded. Phantoms appeared, created from stormlight by the woman with the red hair. These were the shadows in the darkness, the ones he heard whispering of his murders. How she brought them to life, he did not know. He landed near the Reshi Surgebinder lift.
"So," she said to him, "how do we find that ruby?"
Zeth pointed with his sheathed shard blade toward the ships docked in the bay.
"The creature carrying it ran back that way."
The parchment still clustered there, deep within the shadow of the Everstorm.
"Figures," Lift said, then glanced at him. "You aren't going to try to eat me again, right?"
"Don't be silly,"
said the sword in Zeth's hand.
"You aren't evil. You're nice. And I don't eat people."
"I will not draw the sword," Zeth said, "unless you are already dead, and I decide to accept death myself."
"Great," Lift said.
"You're supposed to contradict me, Zeth," the sword said, "when I say I don't eat people. Vasher always did. I think he was joking. Anyway, as people who have carried me go, you aren't very good at this."
"No," Zeth said. "I am not good at being a person. It is a failing of mine."
"It's all right. Be happy. Looks like there's a lot of evil to slay today. That's great, right?"
Then the sword started humming. The brands on Kaladin's head seemed a fresh pain as he dove to strike Amaram. But Amaram recovered quickly from his fit, then slammed his faceplate down. He rebuffed Kaladin's attack with an armored forearm. Those red eyes cast a crimson glow through the helm's slit.
"You should thank me, boy."
"Thank you," Kaladin said. "For what? For showing me that a person could be even more loathsome than the petty light eyes who ruled my hometown?"
"I created you, Spearman. I forged you."
Amaram pointed at Kaladin with the wide, hook-ended shard blade. Then he extended his left hand, summoning a second blade. Long and curved, the back edge rippled like flowing waves. Kaladin knew that blade well. He'd won it, saving Amaram's life, then refused to bear it. For when he looked at his reflection in the silvery metal, all he could see were the friends it had killed. So much death and pain caused by that rippling blade. It seemed a symbol of all he'd lost, particularly held now in the hand of the man who had lied to him, the man who had taken Tien away. Amaram presented a sword stance, holding two blades, one taken in bloodshed at the cost of Kaladin's crew, the other Oathbringer, a sword given to ransom Bridge Four.
"Don't be intimidated," Syl whispered in Kaladin's mind. "History notwithstanding, he's only a man, and you're a knight radiant."
The vambrace of Amaram's armor pulsed suddenly on his forearm, as if something was pushing it from beneath. The red glow from the helm deepened, and Kaladin got the distinct impression of something enveloping Amaram. A black smoke. The same that Kaladin had seen surrounding Queen Aesodon at the end, as they'd fled the palace. Other sections of Amaram's armor began to rattle or pulse, and he suddenly moved with a violent burst of speed, swinging with one shard blade, then the other. Dalinar slowed as he approached the main core of the thrill. The red mist churned and boiled here, nearly solid. He saw familiar faces reflected in it. He watched the old High Prince Kalanor fall from the heights of a rock formation. He saw himself fight alone on a field of stone after a rock slide. He watched as he caught the claw of a chasm fiend on the shattered plains. He could hear the thrill, a thrumming, insistent, warming pulse, almost like the beating of a drum.
"Hello, old friend," Dalinar whispered, then stepped into the red mist.
Shallan stood with arms outstretched. Stormlight expanded from her on the ground, a pool of liquid light, radiant mist swirling above it. It became a gateway. From it, her collection emerged. Every person she'd ever sketched, from the maids in her father's house to the honor spren who had held Syl captive, grew from Stormlight. Men and women, children and grandparents, soldiers and scribes, mothers and scouts, kings and slaves. Pattern said as a sword in her hand. "I've lost these," Shallan said, as Yalb the sailor climbed from the mist and waved to her. He drew a glowing shard spear from the air. "I lost these pictures." "You are close to them," Pattern said. "Close to the realm of thought and beyond. All the people you've connected to over the years." Her brothers emerged. She'd buried worries about them in the back of her mind, held by the ghost bloods. No word from any span reed she tried. Her father stepped from the light, and her mother. The illusions immediately started to fail, melting back to light. Then someone seized her by the left hand. Shallan gasped. Forming from mist was Vale? With long, straight black hair, white clothing, brown eyes. Wiser than Shallan, and more focused. Capable of working on small pieces when Shallan grew overwhelmed by the large scale of her work. Another hand took Shallan's on the right. Radiant, in glowing garnet shard plate, tall with braided hair. Reserved and cautious. She nodded to Shallan with a steady, determined look. Others boiled at Shallan's feet, trying to crawl from the stormlight, their glowing hands grabbing at her legs. "No," Shallan whispered. This was enough. She had created Vale and Radiant to be strong when she was weak. She squeezed their hands tight, then hissed out slowly. The other versions of Shallan retreated into the stormlight. Then, farther out, figures by the hundreds surged from the ground and raised weapons at the enemy.
Adolin, now accompanied by some 24 soldiers, charged through the streets of the Low Ward.
"There!"
one of his men shouted with a thick Thalen accent.
"Right, lord!"
He pointed toward a group of enemy soldiers disappearing down an alley back toward the wall.
"Damnation!"
Adolin said, waving his troops to follow as he gave chase. Yasna was alone in that direction, trying to hold the gap. He charged down the alleyway to... A soldier with red eyes suddenly hurtled through the air overhead. Adolin ducked, worried about Fused, but it was an ordinary soldier. The unfortunate man crashed into a rooftop. What on Roshar? As they approached the end of the alleyway, another body smashed into the wall right by the opening. Gripping his shard blade, Adolin peeked around the corner, expecting to find another stone monster like the one that had climbed into the ancient ward. Instead, he found only Jasnah Kolin, looking completely nonplussed. A glow faded around her, different from the smoke of her stormlight, like geometric shapes outlining her. All right, then. Jasnah didn't need help. Adolin instead waved for his men to follow the sounds of battle to the right. There, they found a small group of beleaguered Thalen soldiers backed up against the base of the wall, facing a much larger force of men in green uniforms. Well, this Adolin could fix. He waved his own soldiers back, then charged the enemy in smoke stance, sweeping with his shard blade. The enemy had packed in close to try to get at their prey, and had a hard time adjusting to the miniature storm that crashed into them from behind. Adolin stepped through the sequence of swipes, feeling immense satisfaction at finally being able to do something. The Thalens let out a cheer as he dropped the last group of enemies, red eyes going black as they burned out. His satisfaction lasted until, glancing down at the corpses, he was struck by how human they looked. He'd spent years fighting Parshendi. He didn't think he'd actually killed another Alethi since, well, he couldn't remember.
Sadeas. Don't forget Sadeas.
50 men dead at his feet, and some 36 killed while gathering his other troops. Storms. After feeling so useless in Shadesmar, now this. How much of his reputation was him, and how much of it was, and had always been, the sword?
Prince Adolin, a voice called in Alethi. Your Highness.
Gadralk? Adolin said as a figure emerged from the Thalens. The queen's son had seen better days. His eyebrows were bloodied from a cut across his forehead. His uniform was torn, and there was a bandage on his upper arm.
My mother and father, Gadralk said. They're trapped on the wall a little further down. We were pushing to reach them, but we got cornered.
Right. Let's move, then.
Jasnah stepped over a corpse. Her blade vanished in a puff of stormlight, and Ivory appeared next to her, his oily black features concerned as he regarded the sky. This place is 3, still, he said. Almost 3. Or 3 places are nearly 1, Jasnah replied. Another batch of glory spren flocked past, and she could see them as they were in the cognitive realm, like strange avians with long wings and a golden sphere in place of the head. Well, being able to see into the cognitive realm without trying was one of the least unnerving things that had happened so far today. An incredible amount of stormlight thrummed inside her, more than she'd ever held before. Another group of soldiers broke through Shallan's illusions and charged over the rubble through the gap in the wall. Jasnah casually flipped her hand toward them. Once, their souls would have resisted mightily. Soul-casting living things was difficult. It usually required care and concentration, along with proper knowledge and procedure. Today, the men puffed away to smoke at her barest thought. It was so easy that a part of her was horrified. She felt invincible, which was a danger in itself. The human body wasn't meant to be stuffed this full of stormlight. It rose from her like smoke from a bonfire. Dalinar had closed his perpendicularity, however. He had been the storm and had somehow recharged the spheres. But like a storm, his effects were passing. 3 worlds, Ivory said. Slowly splitting apart again, but for now, 3 realms are close. Then let's make use of it before it fades, shall we? She stepped up before the rent portion of the wall, a gap as wide as a small city block, then raised her hands.
Zeth of the Skybreakers led the way toward the Parshman army, the child Edge Dancer following. Zeth feared not pain, as no physical agony could rival the pain he already bore. He feared not death. That sweet reward had already been snatched from him. He only feared that he had made the wrong choice. Zeth expunged that fear. Nin was correct. Life could not be lived making decisions at each juncture. The Parshman standing on the shore of the bay did not have glowing eyes. They looked much like the Parshendi who had used him to assassinate King Gavilar. When he drew close, several of them ran off and boarded one of the ships.
There, he said. I suspect they are going to warn the one we seek.
I'm after it, crazy face, Lift said. Sword, don't eat anyone unless they try to eat you first.
She zipped off in her silly way, kneeling and slapping her hands on the ground. She slid among the parchment. When she reached the ship, she somehow scrambled up its side, then squeezed through a tiny porthole. The parchmen here didn't seem aggressive. They shied away from Zeth, murmuring among themselves. Zeth glanced at the sky and picked out Nin as a speck, still watching. Zeth could not fault the herald's decision. The law of these creatures was now the law of the land. But that law was the product of the many. Zeth had been exiled because of the consensus of the many. He had served master after master, most of them using him to attain terrible or at least selfish goals. You could not arrive at excellence by the average of these people. Excellence was an individual quest, not a group effort. A flying Parshendi, fused was a term Lift had used for them, shot out of the ship carrying the large dun ruby that Dalinar sought. Lift followed the fused out but couldn't fly. She clambered up onto the prow of the ship, releasing a loud string of curses.
"Wow," the sword said. "That's impressive vocabulary for a child. Does she even know what that last one means?"
Zeth lashed himself into the air after the fused.
"If she does know what it means," the sword added, "do you think she'd tell me?"
The enemy swooped down low across the battlefield, and Zeth followed, a mere inch above the rocks. They soon passed among the fighting illusions. Some of these appeared as enemy soldiers to further add confusion. A clever move. The enemy would be less likely to retreat if they thought most of their companions were still fighting. And it made the battle look far more real. Except that when Zeth's quarry zipped past, her fluttering robes struck and disturbed illusory shapes. Zeth followed close, passing through a pair of fighting men he had seen were illusions. This fused was talented. Better than the Skybreakers had been, though Zeth had not faced their best. The chase took him in a long loop, eventually swinging back down near where Dalinar was walking through the edge of the red mist. The whispered voices grew louder, and Zeth put his hands to his ears as he flew. The fused was smooth and graceful, but sped up and slowed less quickly than Zeth did. He took advantage of this, anticipating the enemy's move, then cutting to the side as they turned. Zeth collided with the enemy, and they twisted in the air. The fused, gemstone in one hand, stabbed Zeth with a wicked knife. Fortunately, with stormlight, that didn't do anything but cause pain. Zeth lashed them both downward, holding tight, and sent them crashing to the stone. The gemstone rolled free as the fused groaned. Zeth lashed himself gracefully to his feet, then slipped along the stone at a standing glide. He scooped up the ruby with his free hand, the one not carrying his sheathed sword.
"Wow," the sword said.
"Thank you, Sword Nimi," Zeth said.
He restored his stormlight from nearby fallen spheres and gemstones.
"I meant that. To your right."
Three more fused were swooping down toward him. He appeared to have gotten the enemy's attention. Adolin and his men reached a covered stairwell leading up onto the wall. Aunt Navani waved from up above, then gestured urgently. Adolin hurried inside the stairwell and at the top found a jumble of Sadius troops chopping at the door with hand axes.
"I can probably get through that a little easier," Adolin said from behind them.
A short time later he stepped onto the wall walk, leaving five more corpses on the steps. These didn't make him feel quite so melancholy. They'd been minutes from reaching Aunt Navani. Navani hugged him.
"Elokar?"
she asked, tense. Adolin shook his head. "I'm sorry." She pulled him tight, and he dismissed his blade, holding her as she shook, letting out quiet tears. Storms. He knew how that felt. He hadn't really been able to take time to think about Elokar's death. He'd felt the oppressive hand of responsibility. But had he grieved for his cousin? He pulled his aunt tighter, feeling her pain, mirror to his own. The stone monster crashed through the city, and soldiers shouted from all around, but in that moment, Adolin did what he could to comfort a mother who had lost her son. Finally, they broke, Nabani drying her eyes with a handkerchief. She gasped as she saw his bloodied side. "I'm fine," he explained. "Renarin healed me." "I saw your betrothed and the bridgeman down below," Nabani said. "So everyone... everyone but him?" "I'm sorry, Aunt. I just... we failed him. Elokar and Colin are both." She blotted her eyes and stiffened with determination.
"Come. Our focus now has to be on keeping this city from suffering the same fate."
They joined Queen Fenn, who was surveying the battle from atop the wall.
"Estnatil was on the wall with us when that thing hit," she was saying to her son. "He got thrown down and likely died. But there's a shard blade in that rubble somewhere. I haven't seen Shadr. Perhaps at his manor? I wouldn't be surprised to find him gathering troops at the upper tiers."
Counting shard bearers, Thelana had 3 sets of plate and 5 blades, a solid number of shards for a kingdom of this size. 8 houses passed them down, father to son, each of whom served the throne as a high guard. Adolin glanced over the city, assessing the defense. Fighting in city streets was difficult. Your men got divided up and were easily flanked or surrounded. Fortunately, the Satius troops seemed to have forgotten their battle training. They didn't hold ground well. They had broken into roving bands like axe-hound packs, loping through the city and looking for contests. "You need to join your troops," Adolin said to the Thalans. "Block off a street below, coordinate a resistance. Then..." A sudden whooshing sound cut him off. He stumbled back as the wall shook, then the broken gap in it mended. Metal grew like crystals to fill the hole, springing into existence out of a tempest of rushing, howling air. The end result was a beautiful, brilliant section of polished bronze melding with the stonework and completely sealing the gap.
"Taln's palms," Fenn said.
She and her consort stepped closer to the edge and looked down at Jasnah, who dusted off her hands, then rested them on her hips in a satisfied posture.
"So, change of tactics," Adolin said. "With the gap filled, you can get archers in position to harry the army outside and hold the inside square. Set up a command position here, clear the street below, and then hold this wall at all costs."
Below, Jasnah strode away from the marvel she'd created, then knelt beside some rubble and cocked her head, listening to something. She pressed her hand against the rubble and it vanished into smoke, revealing a corpse beneath, and a brilliant shard blade beside it.
"Gadralk," Adolin said. "How are your shard blade stances?"
I've practiced with them, like other officers, and... I mean..."
"Great. Take 10 soldiers, go get that blade, then rescue that cluster of troops over there at the base of the ancient ward. Next, try to rescue that other group fighting on the steps. Station every archer you can up here on the wall, and put the rest of the soldiers to work guarding the streets."
Adolin glanced over his shoulder. Shallan's distraction was working well, for now.
"Don't stretch too far, but as you rescue more men, make a coordinated effort to hold the entire low ward."
"But Prince Adolin," Fenn said, "what will you be doing?"
Adolin summoned his blade and pointed with it toward the back of the ancient ward, where the gigantic stone monstrosity swept a group of soldiers from a rooftop. Others tried, in futility, to trip it with ropes.
"Those men seem like they could use the help of a weapon designed specifically to cut through stone."
Amaram fought with striking fury, a frenetic kind of harmony, an unending assault of weaving shard blades in beautiful stances. Kaladin blocked one blade with the Sil spear, and they locked for a moment. A sharp violet crystal burst out of Amaram's elbow, cracking the shard plate there, glowing with a soft inner light.
Storms!
Kaladin flung himself backward as Amaram swung his other blade, nearly connecting. Kaladin danced away. His training with the sword had been short, and he'd never seen anyone use 2 blades at once. He would have considered it unwieldy. Amaram made it look elegant, mesmerizing. That deep red glow within Amaram's helm grew darker, bloody, somehow even more sinister. Kaladin blocked another hit, but the power of the blow sent him skidding backward on the stone. He'd made himself lighter for the fight, but that had repercussions when facing someone in plate. Puffing, Kaladin launched himself into the air to get some distance. That plate prevented him from using lashings against Amaram, and it blocked hits from the Sill Spear. Yet if Amaram landed a single strike, that would immobilize Kaladin. Healing the wound from a shard blade was possible, but was slow and left him horribly weakened. This was all complicated by the fact that while Amaram could focus only on their duel, Kaladin had to keep watching Dalinar in case... Damnation! Kaladin lashed himself to the side, streaking through the air to engage one of the fused who had started hovering near Dalinar. She struck toward Kaladin, but that only let him change Syl to a blade mid-swing and cut her long spear in half. She hummed an angry song and floated backwards, sliding her sword from its sheath. Below, Dalinar was a mere shadow against the shifting crimson cloud. Faces emerged within, screaming with rage, fury, bloodlust, like the billowing front of a thunderhead. Being near the mist made Kaladin feel nauseous. Fortunately, the enemy didn't seem eager to enter it either. They hovered outside, watching Dalinar. A few had ducked in closer, but Kaladin had managed to drive them back. He pressed his advantage against his current foe, using Syl as a spear. The fused was nimble, but Kaladin was flush with stormlight. The field below was still littered with a fortune in glowing spheres. After he got in close with a strike, cutting the fused robes, she zipped away to join a group that was focusing on Zeth. Hopefully the assassin could stay ahead of them. Now, where had Amaram gotten to? Kaladin glanced over his shoulder, then yelped and lashed himself backwards, stormlight puffing before him. A thick black arrow shot right through that, dispersing the light. Amaram stood near his horse, where he'd unhooked a massive shard bow that used arrows as thick as a spear's haft. Amaram raised it to loose again, and a line of crystals jutted out along his arm, cracking his shard plate. Storms, what was happening to that man? Kaladin zipped out of the way of the arrow. He could heal from a hit like that, but it would distract him, potentially let some of the fused seize him. All the stormlight in the world wouldn't save him if they simply bound him, then hacked at him until he stopped healing. Amaram launched another arrow, and Kaladin blocked it with Syl, who became a shield in his grip. Then Kaladin lashed himself into a dive, summoning Syl as a lance. He swooped down on Amaram, who hooked his shard bow back onto the horse's saddle and dodged to the side, moving with incredible speed. Amaram grabbed the Syl lance as Kaladin dove past, flinging Kaladin to the side. Kaladin was forced to dismiss Syl and slow himself, spinning and sliding across the ground until his lashing ran out and he settled down. Teeth gritted, Kaladin summoned Syl as a short spear, then rushed Amaram, determined to bring the High Lord down before the fused returned to attack Dalinar. The Thrill was happy to see Dalinar. He had imagined it as some evil force, malignant and insidious, like Odium or Sadeus. How wrong he was. Dalinar walked through the mist, and each step was a battle he relived. Wars from his youth to secure Alethkar. Wars during his middle years to preserve his reputation, and to sate his lust for the fight. And he saw times when the Thrill withdrew. Like when Dalinar had held Adolin for the first time, or when he'd grinned with Elokar atop a rocky spire on the Shattered Plains. The Thrill regarded these events with a sad sense of abandonment and confusion. The Thrill didn't hate. Though some Spren could make decisions, others were like animals, primal, driven by a single overpowering directive. Live, burn, laugh. Or in this case, fight.
Jasnah existed halfway in the cognitive realm, which made everything a blurry maze of shadows, floating souls of light, and beads of glass. A thousand varieties of Spren churned and climbed over one another in Shadesmar's ocean. Most did not manifest in the physical world. She willed steps to soulcast beneath her feet. Individual axi of air lined up and packed next to each other, then soulcast into stone, though in spite of the realms being linked, this was difficult. Air was amorphous, even in concept. People thought of it as the sky, or a breath, or a gust of wind, or a storm, or just the air. It liked to be free, difficult to define. Yet, with a firm command and a concept of what she wanted, Yasna made steps form beneath her feet. She reached the top of the wall and found her mother there with Queen Fen and some soldiers. They had made a command station at one of the old guard posts. Soldiers huddled outside, with pikes pointed toward two fused in the sky. Bother! Yasna strode along the wall, taking in the melee of illusions and men outside. Shallan stood at the back. Most of the spheres around her had been drained already. She was burning through stormlight at a terrible rate. Bad? She asked Ivory. It is, he said from her collar. It is. Mother? Yasna called, approaching where Fen and Navani stood by the guard post. You need to rally the troops within the city and clear the enemy inside. We're working on it, Navani said. But, Yasna, in the air! Yasna raised an absent hand without looking, forming a wall of black pitch. A fused crashed through it, and Yasna soul cast a flick of fire, sending the thing screaming and flailing, burning with a terrible smoke. Yasna soul cast the rest of the pitch on the wall to smoke, then continued forward. We must take advantage of Radiant Shallan's distraction and cleanse Thalen City. Otherwise, when the assault comes from the outside once more, our attention will be divided. From outside? Fen said. But we have the wall fixed and... Storms! Brightness! Yasna stepped aside without looking as the second fuse swooped down. The reactions of Spren in Shadesmar allowed her to judge where it was. She turned and swung her hand at the creature. Ivory formed and sliced through the fused's head as it passed, sending it curling about itself, eyes burning, and tumbling along the wall top. The enemy, Yasna said, will not be stopped by a wall, and Brightness Shallan has feasted upon almost all of the spheres Uncle Dalinar recharged. My stormlight is nearly gone. We have to be ready to hold this position through conventional means once the power is gone.
Surely there aren't enough enemy troops to,
Fen's consort said, but trailed off as Yasna pointed with Ivory, who obligingly formed again, toward the waiting Parshman armies. Neither the hovering red haze nor the breaking lightning of the storm was enough to drown out the red glows beginning to appear in the Parshman's eyes. We must be ready to hold this wall as long as it takes for troops to arrive from Yurithiru, Yasna said. Where is Renarin? Wasn't he to deal with that thunderclast?
One of my soldiers reported seeing him, Fen said. He had been slowed by the crowds. Prince Adolin expressed an intention to go help.
Excellent. I will trust that task to my cousins and instead see what I can do to keep my ward from getting herself killed.
Zeth, woven, dodged between the attacks of five enemy fused, carrying the large dun ruby in his left hand, the sheathed black sword in his right. He tried to approach Dalinar in the red mist, but the enemy cut him off, and he was forced to turn east. He skimmed the now repaired wall and crossed over the city, eventually soaring past the monster of stone. It flung several soldiers into the air, and for a moment they soared with Zeth. Zeth lashed himself downward, diving for the city streets. Behind him, fused broke around the monster and swarmed after. He shot through a doorway and into a small home, and heard a thump above as a soldier's body fell onto the roof, then crashed out the back door and lashed himself upward, narrowly avoiding the next building.
Was I supposed to save those soldiers, Sword Nimi? Zeth said. I am a Radiant now.
I think they would have flown like you instead of falling down if they'd wanted to be saved.
There was a profound puzzle in the words, one which Zeth could not consider. The fused were deft, more skilled than he was. He dodged among the streets, but they kept on him. He swung around, left the ancient ward, and shot for the wall, trying to get back to Dalinar. Unfortunately, a swarm of the enemies cut him off. The rest surrounded him.
"Looks like we're cornered," the sword said. "Time to fight, right? Accept death and die, slaying as many as possible? I'm ready. Let's do it. I'm ready to be a noble sacrifice."
No, he did not win by dying. Zeth lobbed the gemstone away as hard as he could. The fused went after it, leaving him an avenue to escape. He dropped toward the ground, where spheres glistened like stars. He drew in a deep breath of stormlight, then spotted Lift waiting on the field between the fighting illusions and the waiting parshmen. Zeth settled down lightly beside her.
I have failed to carry this burden.
That's okay. Your weird face is burden enough for one man.
Your words are wise, he said, nodding.
Lift rolled her eyes. You're right, Sword. He's not very fun, is he?
I think he's devy, anyway.
Zeth did not know this word, but it sent Lift chortling in a fit of amusement which the sword mimicked.
We have not fulfilled the Blackthorn's demands, Zeth snapped at the two of them, stormlight puffing from his lips. I could not stay ahead of those fused long enough to deliver the stone to our master.
Yeah, I saw, Lift said. But I've got an idea. People are always after stuff, but they don't really like the stuff. They like having the stuff.
These words are not so wise. What do you mean?
Simple. The best way to rob someone is to leave them thinking that nothing is wrong.
Shallan clung to Vale's and Radiant's hands. She'd long since fallen to her knees, staring ahead as tears leaked from her eyes. Taut, her teeth gritted. She'd made thousands of illusions. Each one was her. A portion of her mind. A portion of her soul. Odium had made a mistake in flooding these soldiers with such thirst for blood. They didn't care that Shallan fed them illusions. They just wanted a battle. So she provided one, and somehow her illusions resisted when the enemy hit them. She thought maybe she was combining soul casting with her light weaving. The enemy howled and sang, exulting in the fray. She painted the ground red and sprayed the enemy with blood that felt real. She serenaded them with the sounds of men screaming, dying, swords clashing and bones breaking. She absorbed them in the false reality, and they drank it in. They feasted on it. Each one of her illusions that died hit her with a little shock, a sliver of her dying. Those were reborn as she pushed them out to dance again. Enemy fused bellowed for order, trying to rally their troops. But Shallan drowned out their voices with sounds of screaming and metal on metal. The illusion absorbed her entirely, and she lost track of everything else, like when she was drawing. Creation spren blossomed around her by the hundred, shaped like discarded objects. Storms. It was beautiful. She gripped Vale's and Radiant's hands tighter. They knelt beside her, heads bowed within her painted tapestry of violence, her... Hey! A girl's voice said. Could you, stop hugging yourself for a minute? I need some help.
Kaladin ducked toward Amaram, thrusting his spear one-handed. That was usually a good tactic against an armored man with a sword. His spear hit right on target, where it would have dug into the armpit of an ordinary opponent. Here, unfortunately, the spear just slid off. Shardplate didn't have traditional weak points, other than the eye slit. You had to break it open with repeated hits, like cracking into a crab's shell. Amaram laughed, a startlingly genuine mirth.
You have great form, spearman. Do you remember when you first came to me? Back in that village, when you begged me to take you? You were a blubbering child who wanted so badly to be a soldier. The glory of the battle. I could see the lust in your eyes, boy.
Kaladin glanced toward the fused, who rounded the cloud, timid, looking for Dalinar. Amaram chuckled. With those deep red eyes and the strange crystals growing from his body, Kaladin hadn't expected him to sound so much like himself. Whatever a hybrid monster this was, it still had the mind of Meridas Amaram. Kaladin stepped back, reluctantly changing Syl into a blade, which would be better for cracking plate. He fell into wind stance, which had always seemed appropriate. Amaram laughed again and surged forward,
his second shard blade appearing in his waiting grip. Kaladin dodged to the side, ducking under one blade and getting at Amaram's back, where he got in a good hit on the plate, cracking it. He raised his blade to attack again. Amaram slammed his foot down, and his shardplate boot shattered, exploding outward in bits of molten metal. Beneath, his ripped sock revealed a foot overgrown with carapace and deep violet crystals. As Kaladin came in for his attack, Amaram tapped his foot, and the stone ground became liquid for a moment. Kaladin stumbled, sinking down several inches as if the rock were creme mud. It hardened in a moment, locking Kaladin's boots in place.
"Kaladin!"
Syl cried in his mind as Amaram swung with two shard blades parallel to one another. Syl became a halberd in Kaladin's hands, and he blocked the blows, but their force threw him to the ground, snapping his ankles. Teeth gritted, Kaladin hauled his pained feet out of the boots and pulled himself away. Amaram's weapons sliced the ground behind, narrowly missing him. Then Amaram's other armored boot exploded, crystals from inside breaking it apart. The High Lord pushed with one foot and glided across the ground, incredibly quick, approaching Kaladin and swinging. Syl became a large shield, and Kaladin barely blocked the attack. He lashed himself backward, getting out of range as Stormlight healed his ankles.
Storms. Storms.
"That fused," Syl said. "She's getting very close to Dalinar."
Kaladin cursed, then scooped up a large stone. He launched it into the air with several lashings compounded, which sent it zipping off to slam into the head of the fused. She shouted in pain, pulling back. Kaladin scooped up another stone and lashed it toward Amaram's horse.
"Beating up the animal because you can't defeat me?" Amaram asked.
He didn't seem to notice that the horse, in bolting away, carried off the shard bow. "I've killed a man wearing that shard plate before," Kaladin thought. "I can do it again." Only he wasn't merely facing a shard-bearer. Amethyst crystals broke Amaram's armor all up the arms. How did Kaladin defeat whatever this thing was?
"Stab it in the face," Syl suggested.
It was worth a try. He and Amaram fought on the battlefield near the Red Mist, on the western shore, but between the main body of troops and the waiting Parshmen. The area was mostly flat except for some broken building foundations. Kaladin lashed himself up a few inches so he wouldn't sink into the ground if Amaram tried again to do whatever he'd done. Then he moved backward carefully, positioning himself where Amaram would likely leap across a broken foundation to get at him. Amaram stepped up, chuckling softly. Kaladin raised Syl as a shard blade, but shifted his grip, preparing for the moment when she'd become a thin spear he could ram right through that faceplate.
"Kaladin!"
Syl cried. Something hit Kaladin with the force of a falling boulder, flinging him to the side. His body broke and the world spun. By instinct, Kaladin lashed himself upward and forward, opposite the way he'd been flung. He slowed and released the lashings right as his momentum ran out, touching down, then slid to a stop on the stone, pain fading from a healed shoulder and side. A brawny fused, taller than even Amaram in his plate, dropped a shattered club that he'd used on Kaladin. His carapace was the color of stone. He must have been crouching near that foundation, and Kaladin had taken him for merely another part of the stony field. As Kaladin watched, the creature's brown carapace crusted up his arms, covering his face like a helm, growing to thick armor in a matter of moments. He raised his arms, and carapace spurs grew above and below the hands.
Delightful.
Adolin heaved himself up over the rim of a broken rooftop onto a small alley between two buildings. He'd made it to the loft wards of the city, right above the ancient ward. Here, buildings were constructed practically atop one another in tiers. The building to his left had been completely flattened. Adolin crept across rubble. To his right, a main city thoroughfare led upward, toward the royal ward and the oath gate, but was clogged with people fleeing from the enemy troops below. This was compounded by the local merchant guards and platoons of Thalen military who struggled against the tide. Moving on the streets was extremely slow, but Adolin had found one corridor that was empty. The Thunderclast had crossed the ancient ward, kicking down buildings, then had stepped on roofs as it climbed up to the loft wards. This swath of destruction made almost a roadway. Adolin had managed to follow, using rubble like stairs. Now he was right in the thing's shadow. The corpse of a Thalen soldier drooped from a rooftop nearby, tangled in ropes. It hung there, eyebrows dangling to brush the ground.
Adolin swept past, peeking out between buildings onto a larger street. A handful of Thalans fought here, trying to bring the Thunderclass down. The ropes had been a great idea, but the thing was obviously too strong to be tripped that way. In the street beyond Adolin, a soldier got in close and tried to hit the monster's leg with a hammer. The weapon bounced off. That was old, hardened Kremstone. The plucky soldier ended up getting stomped. Adolin gritted his teeth, summoning his shard blade. Without plate, he'd be as squishy as anyone else. He had to be careful. Tactical.
"This is what you were designed for, isn't it?" Adolin said softly as his blade dropped into his hand. "It was for fighting things like that. Shard blades are impractically long for duels, and plate is overkill even on the battlefield. But against a monster of stone..."
He felt something, a stirring on the wind.
"You want to fight it, don't you?" Adolin asked.
"It reminds you of when you were alive." Something tickled his mind, very faint, like a sigh. A single word. "Myalaren."
Name?
"Right, Maya," Adolin said. "Let's bring that thing down." Adolin waited for it to turn toward the small group of defending soldiers, then he bolted out along the rubbled street, dashing straight for the thunderclap.